Blog Talk Radio.
Our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Hey, what up, boxing fans? This is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday night. Hope everybody's doing okay. We got a bunch to talk about, whether it's from this weekend, very entertaining weekend. Virgil Ortiz Jr. knocked out Mo Hooker in style in a lot of ways. However, it was probably a little bit more back and forth than a lot of folks thought. I did think Hooker would have some success, but I thought it would be mostly jabs. I didn't think, of course, there's going to be some hard or flush shots happen, you know, landing, I should say, you know, in a fight. That's pretty basic, but he did get hit a fair amount more, let's put it that way, flush than I thought he would, but it was a good test at this stage. We'll see, you know, what it all means. We'll talk about what that, you know, what did we learn? What does it mean next? They're talking about Terrence Crawford. Is that too big of a bite at this moment? Does he need a couple of fights? We'll talk all about it. There were some other fights just in general on DAZN. Estrada got a big win. Lawrence Okolie got a big win as well. So we'll talk all about that. Also, we got a preview and predict the Povetkin White 2, the rematch, some of the other fights on the schedule, but that is the key one right there. It's in an interesting place, and when I hear the location, I can't help to think of a Jay-Z line, for those who know that, which is a lot. I mean, Jay-Z's pretty popular, right? But every time I say Gibraltar, I can't get that up my head. There is a variety of other things that we'll speak about too. Senior writer Jake Donovan will be joining us from BoxingScene.com very, very shortly. Gervonta Davis is in the news for all the wrong reasons, although this, you kind of knew something like this was coming based off of some of the stuff that was out there prior to these hit and run, a variety of charges. We'll talk a little bit about that. You know, of course, some current fight news. Later in the show, we always go with the boxing Twitter segment, which is always fun. And there's a variety of other news that's out there. Terrence Crawford had an interview in a couple of different spots where he talked about Canelo. Errol Spence will address some of that. We won't dive too deep into that. But before we get started with the recap and whatnot, if this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. You don't have to listen to it in the browser at Blog Talk or Rope-A-Dope or download the show directly there. If you don't want to, you can find this platform under Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found pretty much everywhere. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's boxing, football, baseball, basketball, everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69 a month. There's no annual contract, simple pricing, no hidden fees. They do have the cloud DVR available. Of course, you can stream it anywhere on any device. And right now, if you sign up for the Choice Package, that gives you a free year of HBO Max Plus for a limited time, an NBA League Pass Premium for the rest of the season. Something you might want to jump on. Like I said, that part is limited time. Otherwise, the HBO Max a whole year. That's AT&T TV. Okay. Like I said, there is a variety of items to talk about. And, you know, who else better than to talk about stuff going on in the world of boxing than Jake Donovan? Just a solid, straight-up media member out there. At times, you know, we do kind of, I wouldn't say pick on the media, but we do kind of call them out if they're showing some over-the-top bias. Like, come on, dude. That had to have been a sponsorship. Jake is just kind of tell it like it is, and he doesn't have to tell you like it is as far as, hey, I call it right down the way there. So we like to talk about him. He's very informal guy in a lot of ways. Straight up dude. He put out a – oh, shoot. Sorry about that. I had a little funky thing there. Man, what the hell? Okay. Something just went wrong, but the switchboard's fine. It froze. I refreshed it. Everything's good. He actually recently just put out an article, I believe, with Gervonta on it. So we'll talk about a variety of things. All right. I think it's okay now. That was a scare. I thought the show was going to have to be redone here. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and bring in – this is the longest intro ever. It's kind of starting to feel like Canelo in Miami with the screen. We just need a big screen out there and some fireworks. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Jake. Jake, can you hear me? Everything lovely? What's going on, Jake?
Yeah, man, I can hear you. I can say with that long intro, man, I was waiting for Jay Balvin to walk me in, man.
Seriously. yeah, that was weird.
Hey, let me give you a sponsor shout-out. I've had AT&T TV since last summer. Fantastic. Love it. I went from Hulu to YouTube. Every time the price is raised, I tend to switch providers. I've been so happy with AT&T TV and that year free of HBO Max. You can't beat that deal.
Coming in clutch, especially with the couple of movies they put on there. And that's just straight up. That wasn't planned, folks. Just so you know. So what's going on anyway? How are you doing tonight, Jake? Doing good?
I've been doing good, man. Like I said, always good to come back on the show, kind of catch up. And, you know, there's been so much going on in boxing, so it's really a great time to really just chop it up. So everything's been good, though. Can't complain. Keith and I are just, you know, busier than ever, just trying to keep boxing scene flowing with content.
Man, and you definitely are in a variety of ways. You guys do a great job over there. Let's start in the ring, though. That's what we like to do here at Robodove Radio. There's drama. There's all this stuff that's great, but there's Mike Tyson. There's all sorts of stuff to talk about, but we like to start in the ring. And what better way to start with Virgil Ortiz Jr. getting the TKO? You know, I was one of those folks that thought, you know, Hooker would have success with the jab, would be able to do some things and make it interesting for a couple rounds, and then Ortiz would kind of just take him out. Although it kind of went that route, I thought there was a lot more flush shots landed on Ortiz than I thought going in. What were your thoughts overall? And then, you know, what did we see? What did we learn out of this fight? Is he ready to continue to step up his competition that I thought Golden Boy so far has done a good job of moving against a variety of vets?
Yeah, no, I think they've done great with matching him and testing him, making sure he's not only fighting one or two rounds, getting him those guys where, you know, we've seen that these last four fights he's gone, 6 rounds, 5 rounds, 7 rounds, 7 rounds, which it doesn't seem long in the grand scheme of things, but before Antonio Orozco, he's never been past, you know, he's never been 6 rounds. So now he's starting to see, you know, he can make it to that point against these bigger guys. His power is holding up and he's taking these guys out. The thing I appreciated about Virgil was that he kind of summed up his own performance perfectly, you know, during the post fight. he said he got greedy. He thought he could just hit Mo with as many flush head shots as possible, and he was just going to fall. And it took him a few rounds to realize that, you know what, this ain't not going to work. And especially in the fourth round when Maurice Hooker really punched him with, he punched his way back into the fight, that's when Virgil knew he had to make the adjustment. Once he started going to the body, that's when the fight, you know, really changed, you know, in Virgil's favor. That's when he kind of took over. He dropped him, you know, late in the sixth round. And then in Virgil's mind, the fight was going to end. Obviously, you know, Maurice couldn't continue with the broken right hand. He went down. But you did get the sense that, you know, the beginning of the end was near. And that, you know, that was – once Virgil made that adjustment, he, you know, he kind of took over. But, you know, it was the type of fight we know. I think, you know, we saw the stock rise for both of them. You can't really flood Virgil Ortiz for, you know, looking a little bit vulnerable against a former champion like Maurice Hooker, who had every, you know, all the size of him. He was much taller, had the longer reach. He's probably the better boxer. You know, Virgil, I thought he passed, you know, another solid test. Like I said, he knows the mistakes he made. He, you know, he got a little bit too greedy, maybe trying to please the hometown fans a little too much. But he looked great. And I thought, you know, Maurice looked like, you know, once he's, you know, healthy again, we want to see him again. He's not really that often in a bad fight unless it's just a really, really bad style matchup. But I thought, you know, the guy is a warrior. I mean, he summed it up perfectly. I'm not going to repeat it verbatim on this show, but, you know, everybody knows the quote did. He did, but it was weird. It's like his performance certainly didn't, you know, warrant anyone any criticism, never mind, you know, his hometown fans booing him. So it was a great night. It was a night where, you know, you really want to see both of them. And I don't know if you're going to touch on Sinisi Estrada or not. If you're going to, I'll save it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I got plenty to say about that performance as well. But
yeah, I was actually going to go to that next.
I
do like what I saw out of him in a variety of ways, like you said. It does seem like Hooker is going to adjust to this weight, at least being a contender. It's a deep division, obviously, but he took a lot of those shots early. And like you said, you know, Virgil said it too. Like, I was surprised on some of those shots that Hooker was able to take and not start to get, you know, wobbly in the leg and whatnot. So maybe this 47 is going to work out for him. But it was also nice to see a young fighter not in a huge fight or like a big title fight draw a crowd like that. And I definitely want to talk about the Estrada back and forth fight that was too.
Yeah, definitely. Getting to the crowd, that crowd was really hyped. I mean, it's like Golden Boy didn't want to release the number. They you know, all they said was it was whatever inventory they had, they sold out. But they just wanted to focus on the fight itself, that these two guys brought a nice crowd. And, you know, because of social distancing, these numbers are going to be smaller. But that was a great venue for a fight like that, the Dickies Arena. It filled just, you know, you had just enough fans there, I think. I don't know if it would have done the business that Ryan Garcia did, you know, over at the American Airlines Center. But that crowd was so hype. I mean, you just couldn't hear it, especially once the fight really picked up. It's like that was like a true all-Dallas, you know, rivalry. So I in the ring anyway, because they're both very respectful of each other. So it was great to see that environment, and it's great to see Golden Boy, you know, having that success down there. Getting to Sinisi Estrada, I said this just watching every round. I'm like, she is just so damn good. The thing I appreciate out of her, you know, a lot of people that criticize, you know, women's boxing, it's too quick of a path to the title. I mean, this is her 20th fight. She truly went from newcomer to prospect to contender to champion. It's like she beat all the right people to where once she got to the stage, it's like, okay, well, she's going to succeed. It's not that she's facing, you know, just some weak, you know, opponent, you know, in a thin talent pool for a vacant belt. She beat, you know, someone who was champ for more than 7 years, never been dropped, never been stopped. She dominated her 10-0. I mean, maybe 9-1 at the very worst. But every round, I'm like, she's so good. She's so good. And I hate to draw parallels, but it's like I couldn't help it. I'm like, we're almost watching a female, you know, Chocolatito. She is just that damn good. And if there was much better competition at her level, she would have a legit shot at being pound for pound the very best. I think skill-wise, she's right, easily right there with Clarissa Shields and Katie Taylor right now. She's just – I can't sing her praises enough. That performance was just amazing, just to win a world title in that fashion and just what it means to her. Like, she understands that, like, she's – like, when she grew up, she didn't have, you know, that female role model, you know, boxing role model. She's like, you know, I want to be like her. She was asking, where are all the women at? You know, how do I get there? Now she's there and realizing little girls are aspiring to be like her. I love how she just embraces it and accepts that responsibility when she's, you know, in training and then especially in the ring. So, again, we can do the whole show on her if you want. I cannot sing her praises enough.
You know, that's a good point about it. She did take more traditional, quote-unquote, men's route, especially in the U.S., of all those fights. I never really until you said that, it never really clicked. I'm like, that is a really good point. And now she's fully developed. Hopefully that depth just keeps coming in. But even with Ortiz, yeah, maybe she won one round. But within the round, there was plenty of competition. And like you said, the jab right hand, the lead right hands, the flurries to the head and body. Anytime Ortiz would win parts of the round, boom, Estrada would be right back at her. So I was very impressed as well, man. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and I love the patience that she had, too. It's like there was that sense of urgency. It's like, oh, I only got 2 minutes to get this done. It was like the moment, like, Ortiz tried to turn the tide, she immediately had a response. I think someone even compared, it was, you know, Terrence Crawford was ringside. It was easy to see, you know, the way she's flipping back and forth between southpaw and conventional stance that, you know, she's almost, you know, looked like, you know, a strawberry version of Terrence Crawford. He was even blown away by her. Virgil Ortiz even told me, like, if there's anyone I have to keep sharing my cards with, it's her, because she's just, you know, she even said she's super bad. You know, she truly lives up to her nickname. So,
yeah.
And it's great that she has, that she's dominant, you know, she's commanding this respect among, you know, these, you know, more notable names, you know, such like Virgil Ortiz and Terrence Crawford, Maurice Hooker. Like, everyone who was there who watched it, like, they couldn't get enough of that fight.
Yeah, and that's important when it comes to this, the growth of it, because people are like, I want to see her again, or I want to just see that fighter again, just in general. And I did like the all-purposeness. Sometimes she was using her skill. Other times she was just flurrying, and then maybe she'd get hit a little bit, kind of reset, go back to it. It was a variety of skill there. What'd you think of that Lawrence Okolie fight with Blavatsky? Took a while. We figured, you know, he's always jabbing and kind of hanging around. Took a little while to actually, you know, throw some meaningful punches. But then the meaningful punches came, and, I mean, a little bit more than that came, too. But Okolie's just one of those things, guys under the radar, in a sense, where you're like, you may not like, you know, how he fights or whatever, but he's effective. And when he does step up and throw some hard shots, they land with authority.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you nailed it. I mean, Lawrence Okolie is one of those guys. It's like, you know, we watch him fight. It's like, okay, let's see where he goes. And then it just sneaks up on you. It's kind of like he doesn't fight anything like Joshua Blatzy. But I feel like when I watch both of them, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, you're hyped up about him. Then the fight begins. It's like, oh, why am I into this guy? And then as a few rounds go by, then all of a sudden something clicks. They just turn that corner. And then it's like, okay, this is why I'm into them. Lawrence Okolie did everything that that Eddie Hearn promised that he was going to do. He said he's going to beat Blavatsky, he's going to win this belt, and now he's going to go out and take over the cruiserweight division. For the moment, I don't have any reason to doubt him. You don't want to downplay the performance. I keep thinking, like, what would have happened if this fight happened last March, you know, before the pandemic? What would have happened if it happened any point last year? You know, Okolie had to suffer through all that just as much as Blavatsky. You know, Blavatsky's out of the ring a little bit more. I know Okolie had the layup last December when Blavatsky tested positive for COVID, but that was just for the sake of getting in the ring. I mean, that guy did, you know, little to get Okolie ready for a title stage. It just, watching this fight, it's like, okay, well, maybe this is how it was going to play out all along. And the shame of it is that it didn't, you know, Okolie didn't get the chance to become a star a year earlier. You know, people are arguing, it's like, oh, Blavatsky's still, you know, top five, you know, somewhere in the top 10 cruiserweight. I'm like, I think we've kind of seen, you know, his best. You know, if he's still that good, then Okolie is truly that good. He's probably the best cruiserweight in the world, and he could very well prove that. So hopefully, you know, we're able to care about them. I was just talking about this on another show where, like, the cruiserweight division, like, you know, even when Usyk ran the table at during the World Boxing Super Series, you know, of course we cared about him. We knew who Usyk was, but it's like they always get to that point. Like, whoever dominates, you know, gets to the top of the cruiserweight, then they wind up going to heavyweight, and then we just don't care about the division. It's, you know, it's like a transitional division. So hopefully Okolie makes us care about it, because the only fight out there really for him is, you know, Myres Prades. Maybe, you know, you get you and your Dordekos, if Dordekos is interested in that fight. There's just not a lot of sexy matchups at cruiserweight. And it's weirdly, like, he's talking about he wants to dominate cruiserweight, then he's going to win the Bridgerweight belt and then heavyweight. It just seems like a weird, you know, a weird career path. Like, but, you know, they're embracing collecting as many belts as they can get. So, you know, Okolie definitely has the right promoter. Eddie, you know, he's going to obviously, you know, keep him as a main event attraction. So he's going to build his profile. He's got the Olympic pedigree. Now he's got the championship pedigree. So, I mean, it's hard to, you know, really criticize, you know, beating up a former two-time champion the way he did to win his first world title. So, you know, it's great to see him arrive on this stage. And again, take that role responsibly. Like, you know, this is your first shot. Don't blow it. And he certainly rose to the occasion.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it is funny, before that tournament, for maybe like just several years, 5-6 years or whatever, there was actually plenty of good fights happening at the division. It just, like you said, nobody cares about it. It was like, well, I don't know if any of those guys are even an A fighter, but you know what? It doesn't cost a lot. They do match them up, and it was fun. We would have these cruiserweight segments trying to pump it up, but it was hard until that tournament. And like you said, now it seems like it's going right back to it. DAZN, you know, it's owning March, no doubt about it. And here they come with another one very, very next weekend, Povetkin White. What are your thoughts on this one? I mean, it seems like I'm kind of glad that Dillian White did have that extra time now. Hopefully, you know, from the knockout, obviously, in August, hopefully Povetkin had the extra time. It seems like he did, you know, for his COVID situation. How do you see this one playing out? I mean, it's a very interesting matchup when both guys can you know, crack, no doubt about it.
Yeah, you know, if you asked me, if we did the show yesterday, I'd give you a different response than I'm giving you today. I keep going back and forth on this matchup, but, you know, we could see a repeat of what happened in August. You know, I could be kicking his ass up until he doesn't, until he gets knocked out cold. He can flatten Povetkin at any time. I think the one outcome I probably wouldn't predict is that it will go to distance, and now that I've said it out loud, we're probably going to get a 12-round boxing match. But I just get the sense that
I'm going to go right to the betting line and go over now.
Yeah, you might as well, yeah. So I just get the sense they're just going to go in there and try to beat the crap out of each other until, you know, one of them. I don't think – maybe there's going to be a little bit tentative because they both know they could hurt each other. I mean, you know, White dropped him twice and then obviously landed on the very wrong end of the knockout of the year. So, but I just don't think they have it in it to kind of back down. I think they're both going to charge forward. It's, at some point, it's going to be, you know, resemble the first fight. The thing that worries me is that we've seen it with every single fighter who has tested positive for COVID and who's actually, you know, shown the symptoms and suffered through it. They haven't quite looked the same in their first fight back. And that's the danger I feel for Povetkin, who's already, you know, on the wrong side of his prime. Who's, you know, he's thriving in the twilight of his career, but he is past his prime. And even in his prime, he was a good, you know, maybe very good heavyweight, never a truly elite heavyweight. So that's kind of my worry for him. I'm probably, you know, I'm leaning towards Dillian White in this one. So I think it's going to be a shootout. I think maybe it'll be a little bit tentative early. Once it gets going, it's going to be fireworks. And then I think this time White's going to get he's going to hurt him. He's going to drop him, and he's going to keep him down this time. I think he'll, you know, he does usually find his way through the canvas in these fights just because he keeps fighting stellar competition. So, but I think this time he kind of learns from, you know, the few mistakes he made in the first fight. He gets it right the second time around. Probably, I'm going to say it's 5th or 6th round knockout.
Yeah, and it would appear that he's on weight, well, you know, relatively speaking, in shape, ready to go.
I think they will make weight, yes.
They'll
definitely make
weight.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
They got that. I think they'll get that. Are they going to do the way up on the top of the rock, or are they going to put it like
– That's such a wild location. I mean, just seeing these pictures, that kind of gets you jazzed up for it. I always give Eddie credit. He's always, you know, thinking outside the box, having to do these spectacular events. And who the hell is going to think, you know, doing a fight in Gibraltar during a pandemic? So, you know, looking forward to seeing how that looks. And I'm going to put this out there, too. I mentioned it on Twitter. I'm actually going to write a story on it. But for whatever reason, there's this weird rumor that there's been no drug testing for this fight. There was drug testing for the first fight. There is absolutely VADA drug testing for the second fight. VADA, you know, they're usually pretty cryptic about it. They confirmed it to me on the record. They are testing. They have been testing. They didn't stop testing. You know, obviously, they couldn't test the veteran while recovering from COVID, but they are doing random. Both of these guys have, they're probably, along with Anthony Joshua, the most tested heavyweights in the world. You know, they do testing for every single fight. I think Dillian White, the only one he skipped was the one he did in Saudi Arabia, just because that fight took place on, like, whatever, 10 days notice.
Sure.
But other than that, though, when he has a scheduled fight, I mean, there's been, you know, fights where he's done VADA testing for 16 weeks. So, and Povetkin, he was doing testing when he got caught, although, you know, how do you get caught if you're not being tested? But even after he started the suspension, he's been doing VADA testing for, he hasn't been mandated to do it, but his managers, you know, have, you know, required that he does it for every single fight. So people just need to stop questioning that. Especially, that was the one question when Pavelski knocked out White last year. Like, oh, what was there testing? That was like the first thing I had that in one in chamber. I'm like, yes, there absolutely was testing. So let's just credit the knockout for what it was.
Yeah, that's a good call. Actually, you was saw it on the call not long ago, them talking to ask that question too. I'm glad that we clarified that. And Dillian did say, you know, I've been tested a lot, even last summer, you know, I've been tested a lot this whole time. So,
And he did confirm it on a conference call today too, that he's been tested like twice in the past few days as well. So I think the question came up and he's like, yes, he's been testing. They're not shying away from that. So.
Yeah, definitely. Good call. I'm glad that you cleared that up. There has been a lot of that on boxing Twitter of late. And it's a legit question, obviously.
It is.
But,
of course,
there's a legit answer, too.
Well, it's a shame it's like stuff just isn't transparent like that. You just want this stuff, all the stuff should be on the open. We shouldn't have to ask these questions. So I don't blame people for speculating. But, just ask the question. Don't say just because you don't see it, like, oh, there's no testing. You know, it's like these guys, they're going to come in with needles stuck in their asses.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the Pacquiao and Thurman. I remember asking that question on Twitter and got some responses, got some DMs, and it was like, I'm not accusing of it, but hey, is there something going on here? Because I haven't heard it,
And I think they could do a little bit
better PR of putting it out there. But in general, I think we should kind of stick to it. Let's ask the question first.
Yeah, absolutely.
But of course, that's not how social media goes. You got to have a punchline. You got to have a headline.
Right. And of course, everything that's on its Twitter timeline is true. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hello. Yeah, dude. YouTube and Twitter, dude. That's where you get all your information.
Right. Absolutely.
Speaking of headline there, Jake, Gervonta Davis charged with 14 counts of traffic violation. Violations from alleged hit and run in Baltimore. Now, there was like the immediate thing here that it just kind of was like, well, we don't know. Then there was, it seemed like, okay, he's under investigation and here are the charges. What do we know so far when it comes to this here, sir?
Right. So obviously this came from the incident from last November. It's not like really fresh news. Everyone knew about, the hit and run. It took place a few days after Gervonta Davis knocked out Leo Santa Cruz. And for now, he's accused of it. It's not, there's not definitive proof that he was the driver. You know, they're basing this on eyewitness testimony, and that's how they got to the point where they're able to issue these charges. So, and even in the Baltimore City State Attorney's press release, they said this is not, an accusation. This is, he's being charged with this. This is not that he's guilty. He's going to have his day in court. If he's found guilty on all these charges, here's the maximum sentence. But it's very possible he doesn't even serve any jail time. It's possible that he's found innocent of all these charges. So this is, like I said, these are just the charges against him. From, last November, there was an incident. A car ran a red light, struck a Toyota that had four people in it. They were injured, none of them fatal. So they've all obviously recovered. All the charges too.
It was like traffic lights, right? Like, did someone run a red, or wasn't it like at an intersection?
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was at an intersection at MLK and I'm trying to find the intersection. I think it was MLK and Washington. Yeah, MLK and Washington Boulevard. So, and the red light camera picked it up. That the Lamborghini, 2020 Lamborghini, ran the red light, struck a 2004 Toyota Solara. And I could even read the charges if you want. There's four counts of failure to immediately return and remain at the scene of the accident. Obviously, one count for each of the four people that were injured. Failure of driver involved in accident to render reasonable assistance to injured person. Failure of vehicle driver in involved accident to furnish ID and license. Failure in accident to exhibit license to police. Failure in accident to report to the nearest police. Failure of vehicle driver in accident to locate, notify owner of unattended property. Failure to furnish required ID in writing on unattended vehicle, driving a motor vehicle. This is what struck me as odd. Driving a motor vehicle on a suspended license, driving a motor vehicle on a revoked license. I thought it could only be one or the other. I thought your license gets suspended, eventually it gets revoked. So it's weird that he's going to be up on both of those charges. But driving a motor vehicle on a highway without required license and authorization, and driver failed to stop at a steady circular red signal. So those are the charges against him. Again, they're all misdemeanors, and he hasn't been found guilty of these. These are just the state's attorney feels like they have enough evidence to proceed with this case, so now he's being formally charged. It hasn't been assigned a court date yet. One thing I did mention in my story, too, I find the timing peculiar that, you know, when this came out, the state's attorney who's actually charging them, she and her husband are both actually under federal investigation. Right. You know, their lawyer thinks it's a political witch hunt, but, you know, I'm sure Davis's lawyer is going to argue the same. It's like, well, you know, now you're going after my client because he has a name. And it's just, you know, the timing seems weird for these charges to be introduced. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, they say they have witnesses at the scene. So, you know, this is America. You're innocent until proven guilty. So that's, you know, none of us are there. So unless someone, one of your listeners was actually a witness to it, but, you know, you and I certainly can't speak to what happened. So that, like I said, all I can do is write on what's based in the court report. So that's pretty much the brunt of what Gervonta Davis is facing, other than his next
right. opponent. Yeah. And actually, to reiterate, like you said, all 14 counts were classified as misdemeanors, not felony charges. So when you look at all 14 and you look at the top thing he could get, you're like, wow, that's not that much time. But then I'm glad that you did clear that up in the article. It does kind of feel a sense like the Texas governor, after what happened in Texas, is like, all right, we're opening up straight up. Guys, get happy again. You know, like, it is kind of like, well, wait a second. Are you trying to do this to, like, block something or, like, help forget all the shit that just happened in Texas? We're going to see if that is the case. But you never know. Like I said, on both sides, we like to just straight up, you're reporting it. This is what's going on. This is all facts as far as the report of it happening. But alleged, who really knows exactly how this all goes? Sometimes
and this
a person of fame could be the guy that everybody knew was there, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, and this, to me, like, even just reading through it, I'm not trying to minimize it, but it's one of those things where, like, the headline, it definitely exceeds the storyline. So that's, again, it's, you know, like, something obviously happened. Any traffic, you know, accident is serious, especially, like, when, you know, someone hit and run. It's, you know, that's a crime, obviously. But so, again, I'm not trying to minimize it, but it just seems like, you know, this big, okay, we got all these charges, you know, against Gervonta Davis, and then you read it, it's like, okay, well, all right, so it is what it is. You know, it's a big headline, you know, that it made the news cycle, so we'll see, you know, we'll see what comes of it. You know, for now, Gervonta Davis is going to have his day in court.
There you go. You know, we heard Danny Garcia say, I think, on an interview and on a stream as well, talking about his thoughts of going to 54. I think he said that in the past before, if it's the right fight. What do you think about that? And obviously the 54-pounders, including Charlo, would probably love it because of the name recognition. He also mentioned that in there too. Is he just looking at a way to kind of put the icing on his career with the interim belt, or do you think he's got a few fights up there?
I'm going to say this. I didn't even really like his career at welterweight. Like, up until he got manhandled, well, I'm not going to say manhandled, that's harsh, but, you know, until Spence dominated him. His only two losses, he was, like, maybe three or four rounds away from still being an undefeated fighter. And he lost to, you know, Keith Thurman and Sean Porter. So it's not like he lost to, you know, some 9 and 10 guys. But he still lacks that big win at welterweight that made me convinced me that he can make it a run there. I absolutely hate a move to 154, but the only thing I can say is that he's fought so many people at welterweight. You know, it's like same thing with Sean Porter. It's like they kind of run out of competition. It's like the only guy Danny can really go chase now is, you know, Terrence Crawford. But, like, how do you sell that fight based on, you know, a lopsided loss to Errol Spence? Like, he wasn't even that, you know, it wasn't a 12-0 shutout, but he also wasn't really that competitive. It's where, like, okay, well, let's see what he could do against Terrence Crawford. There's no reason to believe that it wouldn't be the same thing in that fight. So, you know, I don't know if he's going to go after. I kind of sense that Spence is going to want to fight, you know, Yordanis Ugas to, you know, to unify, you know, 3 to 4 belts. And if they don't count Terrence Crawford's belt, then they're going to go around calling, you know, the winner the undisputed champ. But, yeah, Garcia, he's kind of out of competition. I mean, he's not going to want to be a name for Virgil Ortiz. At one point they were talking about a fight between him and Mikey Garcia, but then it's like, well, who's going to pay for that? Where do you put it? If you're already putting Ruiz and Ariel on pay-per-view, does that become a pay-per-view fight? So he could be looking at 154 as, like, you know, maybe his way of hitting the reset button, but, you know, he's going to want big fights. And, you know, and if you know if he's going to go to 154, he's going to get that introductory fight. But even once he gets that win, like, what does he do against maybe he has a shot against this version of Lara, but Lara's even talking about moving up to middleweight. What is he, you know, how can you pick him against someone like Jarrett Hurd, you know, you know, Brian Castagno, Jamal Charlo, who's clearly the best junior middleweight in the world right now. I don't even know if he beats a Banana Rosario or a J-Rock, like guys who are true 154-pound fighters. This is, you know, his third weight class. We haven't really seen like that prime, you know, pound-for-pound version of Danny Garcia since he left 140. So, you know, he looked good in his loss against Keith Thurman. It was a very close fight. It was a competitive but clear loss to Sean Porter, in my opinion. He still lacks that win at 147 that, you know, convinces me. I'm not convinced that he could still do any more at 147, never mind making any kind of noise at 154. And I also don't see him as being the type where he's going to settle for becoming, you know, a high-profile, you know, opponent for, you know, for all these guys. He's not going to be anyone's, you know, springboard to success. So that's – he's in a tough spot. He's almost like in no man's land as far as, like, you know, where he could take that next step. I don't think he should be, you know, considering retirement unless he's just – you know, I'm sure he's certainly financially able to walk away from the game. But, you know, I guess, you know, mentally and physically, does he want to walk away from the game? So, you know, if, you know, he wants to keep fighting, he has to think about his next move. There's just not a lot of matchups that I wanted before I really liked him.
Yeah, and it's not like he can do the transition from 40 to 47 like he did at 54, because like you said, even the second-tier guys, it's going to be a handful right there. I mean,
yeah,
you might have to win on a scorecard robbery just to get by some of those guys. I mean, that's kind of interesting. So Ryan Garcia went from tank, it's tank, it's tank, two rounds, it's tank. Oh, wait, Pacquiao, right. I get it. A lot of people, Spence, Crawford, they're saying Pacquiao too. I get why they want to do that. Now all of a sudden it's coming back to who is he going to fight? What are you hearing? And then we also hear Oscar saying, well, we're thinking about taking him on a world tour.
Right.
With what kind of opponent? And
right.
Are you guys cool with the zone or not? I just don't know where they're at right now.
I'm going to keep my mouth shut on the zone. I kind of know a little. I mean, obviously, you know, from Oscar's tweets, you can see there's, you know, there are issues there. It's pretty clear that the zone's favorite promoter is Eddie Hearn. You know, they actually have, you know, vested right. interest in Matchroom. So that's been, you know, obvious. But Matchroom has all these dates. Oscar, you know, Golden Boy had last weekend, and now they got April 24th. Maybe they're going to have April 23rd in front of that. But they don't have any – it's like it's frustrating because you got the stable. You want to keep them busy, but you're only allowed to go 1 month at a time. Eddie's lining up dates for April, for May. So, you know, Golden Boy, they're not stupid. They see the writing on the wall. So, you know, they're going to have to, you know, they got to protect their own interests. So, you know, they just signed Gilberto Ramirez. I wrote yesterday that, you know, Jaime Munguia is going to be fighting April 24th. They were trying to get that fight with Gennady Golovkin. I don't know why talks stopped. I don't want to speculate. I hope it's not sabotage, but it's a shame that fight's
right.
not happening because I know Munguia really wanted it. I'm sure he wanted to fight someone better than, you know, Maciej, you know, Soleski. But, you know, he's got to stay busy. So, you know, it's a good – I think it's a decent – I'm not going to say it's a good fight, but it's a good, you know, stay busy fight for him. And plus, Munguia is enough of an attraction to the zone where they're going to, you know, give up that date to Golden Boy. And I was told that that's, you know, if Munguia was going to fight and he's not fighting Golovkin, that's the fight they wanted. So – and I guess it's kind of win-win, you know, Golden Boy getting that date there. But you just want to know what's going on after that. And they do, too, because, like I said, they're signing these guys. They want to keep, you know, everyone busy. There's just this weird relationship with Ryan Garcia. You know, Oscar's talking about a world tour, and I'm like, well, when did you actually talk to Ryan Garcia? Because I'm getting the sense that, you know, it's almost kind of same like, you know, how things went with Canelo, where it's like you talk to a lawyer, and then the lawyer talks to Canelo, and it's like there's
right.
the middleman. I'm kind of getting the sense the same thing is going on with Ryan Garcia. So, you know, obviously Oscar has put his name out there. He's his promoter. And, you know, there's always asking when's Ryan Garcia going to fight. And this is what, you know, Oscar has to tell him. This is, you know, the plans we have for him. So, sadly, I'm not hearing any names. I mean, at one point it was on paper that he was going to fight Javier Fortuna. And then he decided, I don't want Fortuna. I only want the super fights. It's like, well, a month ago you had a path. You know, I know he was talking to Manny Pacquiao. And then that, you know, it was almost a done deal up until it stopped. But then you had a clear path to go fight Javonte Davis. Davis was on board.
Yeah.
Mayweather Promotions wanted it. You know, Showtime, CBS, they were willing to talk to, you know, the zone to figure out how to make that fight happen. He stayed stuck on Pacquiao up until, you know, he just, you know, that fight fell apart. You know, now Tank wants to move on. You know, he doesn't want to, you know, sit around and wait for anyone. So I would like to see that fight come back around. You know, obviously, in light of the news we're just talking about, you know, Tank could use some good news
right,
as well. So I think it's a fantastic fight. It's, you know, if you know, they could figure it out, you know, a way to make that happen, why not do that next? I have to imagine they would both want to fight, you know, sometime before the end of June. So, and, you know, both sides can really use the super fight right now. That's, you know, we keep talking about, I'm glad the Four Kings nonsense died down with the lightweight division, but I will say if there was a fight that was going to happen among those four, this would be fight I always had faith would happen.
Yes.
I still have faith that it will happen. I hope it happens next. I'm not optimistic about it, but, you know, if Devin Haney's already fighting Jorge Linares, obviously Teofimo's going to be fighting George Kambosos next. You know, Javante Davis needs to fight somebody. He's got plenty of weight classes to choose. You know, there's rumors of him fighting Mario Barrios. I don't know if that's actually going to happen. Ryan Garcia needs to fight somebody. He can't, you know, Oscar talk all the world tour he wants unless he's going to fight, you know, Henry Cejudo or, you know, some YouTuber. He has to fight
right.
someone real, you know, at 130, you know, at 135. So I'm going to say fuck it. I'm going to keep banging the drum that, you know, Ryan Garcia and Tank fight. I think that would do huge pay-per-view numbers. I think that's probably the biggest fight that can be made right now. I mean, Canelo and Billy Joe Saunders is on his own, but as far as like pay-per-view
right.
attraction, I think that fight, you know, does way better than people would expect it to do.
I agree. And I wouldn't doubt if they do it later in the year just to make sure
right.
they could have full capacity to take care of that gate. But
mm-hmm.
any other items you want to touch upon, or maybe there's a story you're messing with or anything else, Jake?
I mean, like I said, there's a lot of, you know, moving parts. We're just trying to, you know, figure out all the pieces. I know Eddie Hearn just announced that they did the pre-sales for Canelo and Billy Joe Saunders. They said, you know, they've already sold 20,000 tickets for that event.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, you know, that's good news. Like I said, you know, they're eager to put, you know, put fans back in attendance. It's a little scary, you know, that yeah, you hope it doesn't become like a COVID super spread with that many people at AT&T
Stadium. Yeah, with the
no
mask thing.
Yeah, it's tough. I will say, though, like, even just, like, kind of walking around Texas, like, I was, you know, there a few days ago, it's just, it's not quite the wild, wild west. I think Florida's a little more liberal than Texas has been. It just sounds scarier that, you know, people, you know, the governor of Texas, you know, said, okay, this is what's going to, what we're going to allow. But I think people are still being responsible, even, like, walking around. I'm seeing people, you know, outside wearing masks. You know, indoors, you know, obviously they're wearing, you know, it's stores are still enforcing.
Yeah, it's up to
so
the
again,
companies too and the businesses too,
yeah,
if they want to
right.
get
like
going.
I said, Florida,
a lot
even
of
in Tennessee,
path, right?
Right. Yeah, even like out here in Tennessee, you know, like in Nashville, like there's some businesses, they never enforced the, you know, a mask mandate, even, you know, at the height of the pandemic. So
right.
it's, you know, it's kind of scarier being home than actually, you know, going to Texas. So, you know,
right.
but I do like that Texas has become the hotbed of boxing. Now, granted, they need better officiating. You know, the more fights they have, they keep seeing all these awful scorecards, awful refereeing. Although, you know, of all people, Lawrence Cole finally had a good night the other night, thank goodness. But, you know, that comes with a lot of responsibility. You know, you want all the biggest fights. Right now, we're getting them in Texas and Florida, and we're seeing a lot of crazy, you know, officiating going on, you know, whether it's refereeing or just really, really bad scorecards, you know, more of the latter. So, you know, got to tighten that stuff up. But, you know, I'm glad, you know, that's, you know, definitely good news as long as, you know, boxing, you know, we have a place, you know, to house all these big fights. Las Vegas is trying to get back in the mix. So, you know, Jose Ramirez and Josh Taylor, that's going to be a fight with fans in attendance wherever that lands. So, you know, lots to look forward to. Boxing is, you know, slowly getting back to normal. And, you know, obviously with plenty on the schedule, Keith and I are talking every week about, you know, how we're splitting up weekends. It's not like, well, one of us is working and one of us isn't. So, you know, there's
right.
always plenty to
that's a good
plenty
point.
To watch. That's yeah, definitely. So it's certainly a lot better than it was this time last year. That's, you know, that's definitely the, you know, the glass half full version.
Well, I appreciate you stopping by and talking
yeah.
some boxing, Jake. Look forward to having you back. You have yourself a good night, man.
All right, thanks so much. Always having me on, Chris. Always a pleasure.
Yes, sir. Have a good night. Enjoy the fight this weekend.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Yep. All right. Senior writer, one of the better writers out there, just as far media member, just in general out there, Jake Donovan. You can follow him on Twitter. He's a great Twitter follow. He just, like I said, he says it like it is, just straight up, but doesn't need to tell you he calls it down the middle, because you know what? He just does for the most part. And everyone has a bias. That's why I say for the most part. So Jake Donovan, Boxing Scene, thank you very much for swinging on through. Okay, we're going to keep it going here. We're going to keep it going. Later in the show, of course, current fight news, the boxing Twitter segment where we call out the media members that are acting like fanboys. We call out some fanboys with some funny-ass tweets. But we also have some just solid, yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself tweet as well. We'll get into a variety of other items. But I'm going to go ahead and bring in great boxing mind John into the fold. What's going on, man? How the hell are you, buddy?
Hey, Chris, good to be here. Just was enjoying listening to you and Jake talk boxing and prepared to fill in various areas where I can. But good discussion there. Enjoyed listening to it. And, of course, there's always...
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, last week, talking about this Hooker-Ortiz fight, basically everybody, of course, favored Ortiz clearly. The success, especially with the jabs, let's say by Hooker, is not surprising. I did think he had more success with flush shots than I thought. What do you think of Virgil Ortiz, you know, the fight itself, how many times he got hit, what he did to stop the fight, what did we learn, basically? And also, what is the next step? Now, we heard about Terrence Crawford. They were kind of jaw-jacking back and forth. We've heard a variety of other names. I think a guy like Jesse Vargas or some of these other guys would be a good step up. I do like how Golden Boys has moved him thus far, considering how many fights he has. Well, what's your take on Virgil Ortiz's TKO? And you know what? That crowd, especially, I was saying, I love that there was a great crowd there, being that this wasn't some kind of big title fight, you know?
Yeah, it was a good atmosphere, especially considering we're, you know, even if we're in the latter stages, we're still in a pandemic. This one played out pretty much the way I thought it would. You know, as you mentioned, Chris, there was maybe Hooker just had a couple of moments here and there, slightly more than I thought he would have. It kind of like the Ramirez fight. But he didn't even really land, which is with as much authority as he did against Ramirez in a few spots. But this one played out about the way I figured. I figured Hooker would do a little bit like he did in the Ramirez fight, and, you know, Ortiz would keep coming, and Hooker wouldn't have enough pop to hold him off. And, you know, he never hurt Ortiz or even came close to it. I just think that people believe Hooker's a bigger puncher than he is. You know, I said that going in and watching the fight. I thought that played out. And I think Ortiz, he did get hit some, did a little against Sammy Vargas, who is not that good, relatively speaking. But I have a feeling that Ortiz really knows these guys can't hurt him. And, you know, he's just coming in to do destruction, and he's not too worried about what guys like Vargas and Hooker have coming back at him. I think that'll change with different opponents. So my own take on it, as I saw a lot of people criticizing Ortiz's defense, I thought maybe they're getting a little too carried away. I just think these are guys that he doesn't particularly have respect for their punching power, and he's going to take them out. And I like that because, you know, he's got the 100% KO percentage, and he knows these are level of fighters, even as he's stepping up a little bit, that he should be able to take care of. Now, one thing that I did tweet, I think I was thinking about it a little bit myself, and you know, you get so clouded with these unnecessary belts and weight classes and too many titles per division. You know, if you look at you know, transnational, you know, Jake and I are both on that, and then, you know, you have the ring. I mean, if the welterweight title is vacant, which I think all authorities on these types of things, including those two rating organizations, if you want to call the ring and transnational that, you know, the real welterweight title, lineal title, is vacant right now. Spence is number one, Crawford's number two. Virgil Ortiz, you know, was in everybody's top 10, the back half of it already, probably even moves up a bit after stopping Hooker, even though Hooker was unranked at welterweight. So, you know, Chris, you've been following boxing a long time as I have and are really a student of the sport. Thinking of it this way is what I'm getting to. You know, if Crawford's the number two ranked welterweight, which that's really what he is when you throw away all the alphabets. And Ortiz was maybe 10, and now, you know, maybe he moves up to 6, 7, something like that. Why shouldn't he be fighting a Crawford? I mean, if the fight could be made. Now, I know we've got all kinds of politics, TV networks. I always look at that. I don't think the fight will be made, but about the part of whether he should take that or not. So, okay, so the worst thing that would happen is he loses. But if he's in reality, you know, 6, 7, or 8 contender around there and Crawford's number two, you know, that would be a fight of fighters in those positions, you know, for the history of boxing since it started through the 80s that you would have seen that typically. So, you know, the worst that happens is he loses. So I think the talk that, well, he's not ready, people clutching their pearls, that's probably a bit much. It doesn't mean I'm saying he beats right. Crawford, but you know what's Crawford 34 years old now too. So, I mean, it would be all in a certain sense, if Crawford Spence isn't going to happen, it would be a logical step for Ortiz. But then let's look at Crawford's situation. Really, when you think about it, why would Crawford take that fight? He's got one more fight by all reports left on his Top Rank deal. You know, if he does want a Spence fight, I mean, I'm not saying he will do it, but he fights one more fight for Top Rank, and
right,
he can sign with 2DC, and the Spence fight should be available. So why would you, you know, take on a young puncher like Ortiz, even if Crawford, I'm sure Crawford's not afraid of him, but why really take that if that's going to be your last fight with Top Rank, and you got to then make a crossover with Golden Boy and DAZN with Ortiz? This is the problem we've got with the sport nowadays. You know, I just don't even see how it would happen.
Yeah, I agree. And also, just like you said, as you know, management goes, it's like, well, that's a fight that in a year, year and a half, 2 years could still happen, and it would probably even mean more, because then you'd allow Virgil to continue to develop or whatever. And maybe if you win or lose, then you can go back, especially if you lost, that could be a fight you could build to. Maybe it would just be a short time with the PBC. I don't know. The way Terrence talks, it could be just talk. We really don't know. I like fights like a Jesse Vargas, which is a fight that probably could be could get made. Avanesian is some, you know, somebody that has been mentioned. Meat Machine Kavalaskis is another one for Virgil Ortiz. I hope they just keep, you know, giving him a level up minorly, because, like I said, I do like the way he's been moved so far, considering he doesn't have a bunch of fights. Jamal James, Formella. There's a lot of names out there on that second tier in below fringe welterweight, because it's so deep that way. I like any of these fights, but Jesse Vargas, Virgil Ortiz, sign me up for that.
Well, again, I think here's where I think part of the problem is, Chris. This is where I might differ from you just a little bit. Is, you know, you make a good point, but like PBC, this is where, to me, the guys that really might be more of a threat to Virgil Ortiz, where it would really be a step up, testing him more, they're all with PBC. Now, there are people that differ from me here, I know, in evaluating the welterweights. I think it's the deepest division in boxing, so that makes it more interesting to me. You got a lot of disagreement, but I think this is a good spot to point it out. You know, I think Avanesian beating European-level type guys like Josh Kelly and Larry Yaga. I mean, the guy was in life and death with Shane Mosley. He got knocked out by Kavalaskis. He lost to Peterson, handled. It was a great fight, but, you know, Lipinets handled him. I don't think Avanesian has anything for Virgil Ortiz. I don't think Jesse Vargas does at this point. You know, he got dropped by Mikey Garcia. I mean, Mikey Garcia, in a way, is an underrated fighter. And, you know, he fights kind of sporadically. And, yeah, he's moved up in weight classes. But I think a lot of his talent, so that's no shame for Jesse Vargas. But, you know, whenever he's stepping up a bit, I mean, he, you know, he even faded in the second half of the fight against Broner. I mean, again, he's not a puncher. What's he going to have for Virgil Ortiz? Now, you know, you mentioned a Jamal James. Jamal James is really, to me, you know, kind of a legit number 10 guy in the division around there, when you're just, you know, forgetting about all the alphabet stuff. He's tall, not a ton of pop, but some. That would be like a real competitive type matchup, but him being with PBC, again, I don't see any way that would happen.
They're looking to move him a different way.
Right.
They're looking to get him
a
bigger name.
Exactly. And in an ideal world, really, even a heck of a matchup would be a guy like Ugas. I mean, that would be a real test where you're fighting another real top 10 guy who knows what he's doing, and that would be a tight fight. See, those are fights that then are tighter. You're wondering a little what's going to happen. But to me, there's just no doubt to me, Virgil Ortiz is taking out an Avanesian and he's beating a Jesse Vargas. But you're right. I mean, the best the zone could do in terms of having somebody available, I mean, Jesse Vargas would certainly be a top candidate, and so would Avanesian, because I think he's fighting with Matchroom now, and as you and Jake were discussing, which is the truth, people tend to forget it. It's Matchroom USA. It is different from Hearn's, UK operation, but Matchroom USA is 40% owned by DAZN. So, and, that's right. Eddie Hearn. So, like I said about him, like Jake was saying about him becoming the favorite promoter, they own 40% of what he's doing in the United States.
Right.
Right. There's a big reason for that. So we tend to forget that, but we shouldn't be forgetting it. So, as long as De La Hoya's got his guys on DAZN, you would think then that's easier to bake, since DAZN owns 40% of Matchroom USA. Because it is getting frustrating. I mean, we're in the pandemic, so, we're coming out of it. It's made things more difficult. But you look at the action over the last few weeks, and even though we've always had this, I start looking around and I'm saying, you just can't put any of these guys together with the TV deals. Yeah, sure, you could have somebody that says, points out it happened once here or there. But let's face it, the percentages of when it happens are so low. So I've been campaigning in recent years for let's at least make the best in-house fights. And that's where PBC's got the biggest roster. They seem to be holding back on putting their best together lately. You don't know if it's, waiting out the pandemic or other reasons, but I'd like to see them do that. I'd like to see them all do it. Top Rank, you had like a Valdez, Burchell. That's a little bit more like that. They're putting some of those on ESPN. Now, they hadn't been doing it, but they're dipping their toes in the water a little bit, maybe. But we need to see, we're going to have to, anybody that's got any depth on their roster is going to have to start putting their guys together and at least giving us that. And because we're just not getting the cross promotional and the cross TV stuff. You talk about it, but it's just like spitting into the wind.
Yeah, it really is. And off topic, but on topic, just to kind of back up to that Matchroom, DAZN situation. How does that work as far as the Ali Act in the network? I know it's a streaming service, but I'm sure in court it could be called a network potentially. How does that work? Because isn't the network not supposed to have anything to do with a promotional company, and a promotional company supposed to be separate from a manager? And how is that? Am I missing something there?
I'm not sure exactly what, if there's a network component to it, Chris. The one part I know, and I agree, when it gets hard to follow, but I think of why it was initiated, and John McCain initiated it, and it always helps me keep it straight, because I remember why John McCain was doing it. I want the fighters protected, but it's really outdated. I mean, what John McCain was trying to do, and you know your boxing history, so you remember all this stuff. It was really what McCain had that pass for was when Don King was in, he's still even to this day in cahoots with the WBC, but, we know they were his main benefactor back, certainly in the 80s and 90s. And remember, he had his stepson Carl King as manager. So Don King, was getting cuts as promoter. His stepson Carl King was the fighter's manager, quote unquote, there. And then the WBC was involved, and they were in cahoots with King. So really, McCain was, because, you know, McCain, he cared because he was a boxing fan, and then he was, even though Harry Reid was a Democrat, you know, he was friends with Harry Reid, who obviously was a senator in Nevada and was a former amateur boxer. So he had, you know, with the Vegas boxing industry, he was interested, and he had a boxing interest on his own from his own background. So, you know, they put this stuff together, and the rest of the Senate didn't care either way because they didn't really care
right.
about boxing, you know, even back 30 years ago. So it was kind of like, yeah, John and Harry, whatever you guys want to do, you know, we can put together, we can go along on that. So I know we're talking about the year 2021, but, you know, that legislation hasn't been updated or anything like that or revised. So I always, when I get confused myself, I always take myself back to, I know what it was originally passed for. And, you know, of course,
yeah,
the atmosphere is different nowadays. So, you know, an example was, you know, of course, the most famous recent example, you know, when Al Haymon,
mm-hmm.
you know, was doing PBC, you know, of course, he's a manager. And so he had to get, you know, quote unquote promoters just because it had to be separate because of the Ali Act. And I don't
right.
want to make out that Al Haymon's perfect compared to anybody else as a person, but you don't hear stories of fighters complaining about him ripping them off, and that's just a fact.
Yeah, no.
So
no.
why right? So why I say that is I don't think it's naive to say it wasn't. You know, when Haymon was doing PBC and he was managing these guys and he took them all from Golden Boy. I mean, that is a fact. You know, he wasn't setting up then PBC to try to take extra money from his fighters or anything. He was trying to get him more exposure and you know, lead to what he ultimately got, which was a network deal, even if it wasn't a massive one. Still, nobody thought boxing was going to get any kind of network deal ever again.
Right.
So, but you know, then his competitors were trying to throw around there, oh, he's violating the Ali Act. And why I mention that is, you know, now it's TGB Promotions that Haymon has doing most of the promoting. He's got to go through
right.
the exercise of having a quote unquote promoter because of the
Ali
Act, because of the legalities. But in 2021, it's really kind of pointless. You know, it's an outdated. It's kind of I'm not saying protecting the fighters is outdated, but a lot of the Ali Act is really kind of outdated, because that's also why, like we know what a mess is with the sanctioning bodies. I mean, I know there's some people who are out for the fighters, and I'm out for the fighters. I think you are, but they want to knock, you know, if say an Al Haymon and PBC were to have their own belts and say, oh, that's a violation of the Ali Act. You know, that is where you're getting into a gray area. But again, if it was, the idea was because of those days with Don King and the WBC and John McCain and Harry Reid were trying to, you know, curtail some of those practices and keep fighters from getting ripped off, which, you know, when they were, you know, not that it still doesn't happen, but they certainly were getting ripped off. So where we're at today is, my opinion is, and I'm all for protecting the fighters, is we're with some outdated things. Like, I'm not saying I would like it. I don't want it like the UFC in the sense where they're limiting the fighters' pay, but I disagree with some people who are out for the fighters. I'm out for the fighters too, and I think we're at a point where, you know, we'd be better off if PBC was, you know, the WBC, so to speak, and Top Rank was the WBO. I mean, they're close to that anyway, but I just think we're at a point where
because they'd rank their own guys, you know.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Let them rank their own guys. Let's
right.
throw away the facade and cut out the sanctioning fees, you know, because it would just be owned by the promotion. And
good call, yeah.
Something along those lines, because what, you know, obviously we know what we have doesn't work. I mean, that would not be as good as if we had, you know, an independent type thing, like the equivalent of you have like an amateur boxing or, you know, in World Cup soccer. Those types of things. I'd rather have that first, but if
right,
we're not
right.
going to have that, what we have now doesn't work. So,
yeah, exactly. And also, part of it is being able to have access as a fighter to what the whole budget is. Okay, back when HBO was in the business, how much money did they give to so-and-so to give to me, and how much money are they getting, you know, to kind of see the whole budget in a sense. And that's actually what Skipper, John Skipper, came out and said that he actually messed up when it came to the Wilder and the Joshua fight, is they wanted to know what, you know, it's fair. They wanted to know what the hell Joshua was making, and they didn't even have Joshua on a – they had him on a fight-by-fight, so they didn't even have – you know, there were some guarantees in there that said, hey, we guarantee you these two fights, except it's not guaranteed, one. And two, you don't even have him signed for this fight yet, so why do I have to put pen to paper for three, four fights that he gets to do on a – you know, I know there was some of the – like to – I guess I – to clarify, to kind of update Aliak in rights for the fighters. I think that's what we're working with now in the last 10, 15 years, is the fighter is more involved with, okay, what the hell's the budget? What am I getting? What is he getting? Yada, yada, yada. So I just wanted to ask you that, because it was just like, now, wait a second. That's on the up and up? That just seemed like a weird thing to have a network that owns a promotional company, or at least partially enough, maybe because they don't own more than, I don't know, maybe the 50% thing, I don't know. But just to kind of further along, you know, Estrada looked good on the undercard. What do you think of Lawrence Okogie's fight as well? He's a guy that you're kind of like, is this guy just playing with his food? And then he throws a meaningful shot.
Yeah, I mean, that fight ended just the way I thought it would. I thought Glowacki would show a little more before that. He didn't really show anything on Saturday. But the way Okogie ends fights, that was just the way he ends them. Now, he was still very conservative. You know, sometimes he's hesitant. But he did, for him. Now, this is for him, not for other fighters. But for him, In his initial rounds before he unleashed the bomb, he was doing slightly more with the jab and throwing a couple power shots than he usually does. I mean, when you watch Okogie's fights, I mean, it's capable, you know, he's capable of doing virtually nothing and then just doing just what he did to Glowacki. It always seems like it comes out of nowhere. But he can do that. The power is real. You know, I said that before last week. He confirmed that. And that's what's interesting about the guy, because – you know, he'll have a fight where he bores you for rounds, and he's going to do that in the future.
Yeah.
He's got that patient approach, if you want to call it that, giving him the benefit of the doubt, but it's almost too much lack of aggression. But he's made it work where he's got such tremendous power that he can sit around and just unload. And, you know, I usually kind of hate sometimes these types of comparisons, but I think in his case, you know, the British commentators were comparing him a little bit to Wilder. It's not really that bad of a comparison. I mean, you know, just where he could be sitting around and then just, you know, he's got the physical tools and looks like he might be able to do more, but just waiting around and then unleashing that right hand bomb and the fight's over. He's a guy
doesn't
that can
defend
do that.
Well either. That is actually
right.
a little bit bad. Yeah, that's not a bad comp.
Not, and he's 6'5", you know, he's tall and lanky like that. I do like how he's talking about going to heavyweight already. I heard Jake mention it, and the only part I disagree with Jake is I'm okay with that. I mean, like, I feel we should only be at 8 weight classes with the possible addition of cruiserweight. So, because the heavyweights have gotten so much bigger, I acknowledge that there's a need there, that's only when it got started, it was kind of just about the alphabets, but there's become a need in that area. That's really the only weight class that there's some need, and I would have that where just that cruiserweight would be the only weight class if there were 9, which I would think there should be 9, that the weight could gradually go up periodically, you know, let's say every 10, 15 years or something like that, and then we'll just leave it like that. But with that said, that there is probably a need, even though there's arguably a need, there's never been a top cruiserweight that couldn't fight at heavyweight, which almost goes against the need. And then like Jake said, you know, it's just really a transitional stepping stone division, because who's ever at the top of that division, you look throughout its history, you know, really at the top, not just picked up an alphabet belt, but a guy who was like a great fighter. They've always been able to fight at heavyweight. And look, guys like Michael Moore, Michael Spinks, they didn't even bother with the cruiserweight division, and they're fighting in the modern era. They won lineal heavyweight titles. So it is just like, to me, like Jake said, I look at it the same way, and this is definitely applies to Okoli. It's just like a developmental, like, kind of like developing ground for anybody that's really that good. Because if you're that good, you're going to heavyweight, and the guys that have been that good have been able to, you know, be a factor. Let's even look at a guy like Thomas Adamek, who started at light heavy, you know, picked up cruiser belt. I mean, he beat Areola, you know, he beat an old Michael Grant. Now, you know, he failed against Vitaly Klitschko, but failing against a guy as good and as big as Vitaly Klitschko is not a disgrace. You know, I mean, he was able to be competitive as a heavyweight. So, and I just say that because Adamek was a very good fighter, but you're not really thinking of him as an all-time great. And that's why it frustrates me when people talk about this babying and clutching their pearls with Usyk. I mean, you just got to say it, but it's especially with a lot of the European fans. I mean, if the guy's supposedly that great, you know, he should be a heavyweight factor. I mean, it shouldn't be that we're wondering what he's going to do. I mean, the guy in the World Series of Boxing, he fought Joe Joyce and beat him in Junior Fa. Those guys are big heavyweights. I mean, that was what he was in the World Series of Boxing after his amateur career. So what are we worrying about all this transition? And the guy's in his early 30s. I mean, if he's this great pound-for-pound fighter where everybody's got him in the top five of their pound-for-pound rankings, this shouldn't be that big of a deal. I mean, you know, he fought Chaz Witherspoon and, you know, basically a gatekeeper in Chisora. I mean, you know, time to make a move if you're that great. Just saying that, like, Okoli, I like how he's talking. You know, a fight with Bredis would be interesting and maybe would be something that could be made, but Bredis is talking about heavyweight. I don't think we're necessarily going to see him at cruiserweight anymore. So I that would be something I'd like to see. But, again, if he's not going to be able to fight Bredis, then let's develop quick and get up to, if you're Okoli, 6'5", get up. He's got the power, obviously, get up to heavyweight.
And that is a good point, too, because Usyk's had plenty of time to adjust the weight, walk around weight and all that, some of the extra weight he's going to have on now. Because that was 2018, the end of 2018, right? So, I mean, it's been quite a while for him to just adjust the body and carry it, and maybe he's going to take a little off or put a little on or whatever. So, yeah, it is time to step all the way up, especially – and you made a good point at the end of that. If you have him in the top five pound for pound, then what's the problem? I mean, either you don't or you do, you know?
Exactly. And he's 6'3". You know, he's not sure he was making 200 pounds, but he fought heavyweight as an amateur. Like I said, he fought Joyce and Fah in the World Series of Boxing. You know, he doesn't mean he's as big as some of these other guys, but he's not a small guy. He's not a small guy. So, you know, but something really needs to happen there. I like the Okoli thing's interesting with his power, and you know, he's got a frame for heavyweight. He's talking about it. Keep that going. That's where I just differ with Jake and some people. That to me, though, I don't find it like tragic that these guys, you know, if that Okoli won't stay around cruiserweight. If, I mean, heavyweight's the traditional division, the glamour division, where the money is. So to me, it's always go for it. If you're that good, go for it at heavyweight. I don't spend time myself worrying about the dilution of the cruiserweight division.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Speaking of the heavyweight division, we got a rematch. We have a rematch. Obviously, Dillian White. It was kind of a back-and-forth fight. I thought Povetkin was doing actually pretty good before he got hurt and put down and all that. White kind of let him – I mean, he doesn't have great defense as it is, so a lot of a lot of people are saying, oh, he just made one mistake. Well, he makes multiple mistakes every fight. So I don't know if it just comes down to that. But, yes, especially at heavyweight, and Povetkin with his left hooks, his overhand rights, when he's up close on your chest, can do damage. He broke, you know, he broke AJ's nose, and, you know, looked like he kind of buzzed him or hurt him a little bit in that fight. Obviously, Dillian White, for a while there, he was saying I was up. Even Eddie Hearn was saying he was up. He beat the count, actually. He was just out of it. And then when you watch, you're like, nah, dude, he was swimming. He was not trying to get up. He was out of it. It's okay. I kind of like that, like I mentioned, that he at least got this time now to kind of rest and heal, you know, heal from a knockout like that. And hopefully Povetkin had enough time with the COVID scenario that he's in tip-top shape. How do you see this rematch going? Because you can really, I believe you can kind of make an argument for both guys. Both guys, though, are ready to kind of fall off the cliff and show a drop in level just off age and, you know, the punishment they've taken. Obviously, Povetkin, you feel like that could happen at any time because it's even more of an age factor with him. Like that Hunter fight where it felt like, hey, I'm not taking any away from Hunter. He fought really well, but it didn't. It seemed like Povetkin had kind of taken a half step back on that one. How do you see this rematch playing out?
It sounds like I see it quite a bit like you, Chris, and some people aren't seeing it that way. But first of all, I think in the first fight, despite what the British commentators were saying, until Povetkin got dropped, I thought he was doing pretty well. I mean, I thought that fight was playing out, you know, pretty evenly overall. You know, now I don't, like you said about White, I mean, I just, relatively speaking, I just don't think Dillian White is particularly talented. I just don't think he's a real talented fighter. I think that the one thing he's proven to me two things, though, over the years that I didn't necessarily think when he first started seeing him. One, the guy's an exciting fight, so I can't deny that. I've gotten to where I look forward to seeing him because he is vulnerable because I think, again, relatively speaking, he's not that talented. But then the other thing he's proven to me that I didn't think he had is he throws that awkward left hand. It's almost a weird shot, but he's proven to me he can hurt anybody with that shot. But when I watch Dillian White fight, I mean, to me, that's really like all he has. I mean, you know, he's got some heart because to me he hangs in there with limited talent and he's had to get off the deck a lot for sure. But he's just not that, again, relatively speaking, he's just not that good. I thought when he fought Joseph Parker, the first knockdown was a bad call by the referee. I mean, if you look at that, it was a blown call. Then he threw that crazy left hand and knocked Parker down legitimately. And Parker's got a good chin. You got to give him that. So he was able to drop Parker again with that shot. That's that shot he has. But then Parker had him out. I mean, you know, we know how Parker has had that problem with lack of aggressiveness. So it's not, you're not just saying it because he was only fighting White. I mean, if Parker would have started any time other than the 12th round, late in the 12th round, I mean, White would have been out of there. So, you know, he got dropped by Rivas. He's been knocked out by Joshua. You know, the first Chisora fight was close. I mean, Chisora is just a gatekeeper. You know, the second Chisora fight, Chisora had him, basically. He had him. And, again, White with that crazy left hand he's got, you know, he landed that bomb and he took him out. You know, again, you have to give White that much credit, but I just don't think he's that good. But he caught Povetkin with that shot twice and dropped him. And I thought Povetkin was doing well up to that point. Now, you get to the round of the knockout, though, even though Povetkin had been dropped twice, he had the break in between rounds. He was fighting like his regular self when he caught White. I mean, that was a bomb, but Povetkin's got a strong left hand. I mean, it wasn't a lucky bomb. You know, it was a skilled, good shot. And like you said, White was out. I mean, forget talk about getting up or he could have gone on. Dude was just about out cold. I mean, he went down like a sack of potatoes. I mean, so, you know, now I did pick Povetkin in the first fight beforehand. I thought, you know, he was then 40, now he's 41. I just thought, you know, can he generate the power? See, I think this fight, I'm not saying it will. I don't think it's impossible this fight could go the distance. You know, can Povetkin get a fair shake if it does go the distance? And I don't mean it's a conspiracy or anything, but even in this rematch, White's going to be the favorite. Hearn wanted this fight. You know, White's the guy, even now, after getting knocked out the first time, if you look at the odds, and Hearn just clamoring for the fight. He's not even denying it. Hearn said this week he's nervous. So, you know, he's not nervous because he's hoping for an Alexander Povetkin win again. He's nervous because his guy, Dillian White, that he's been trying to push for an alphabet title shot, is like you said, he's on the verge of being on the way out. You know, he can't lose to a 41-year-old guy. So it comes down to me, Povetkin's got the pedigree. I think Jake was right the way he categorized him. I'd never even at his best put him as a great heavyweight. He was the best guy out there other than goes in a horrible era. That's the way I look at it. So I see him the way Jake did. You know, good fighter, great amateur pedigree, but, you know, some people will try to take it a little far and just say because he was around with the two Klitschkos that, like, he was great also, you know, but he couldn't get by. You know, Vlad Klitschko, I don't see him that way. But I do see him as having more talent than Dillian White, and natural talent, really, too.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's 41. So, you know, I didn't think a 40-year-old necessarily could – I thought he'd win, but, you know, could he land the power shot like he did? So I'm going to have to say, you know, he had COVID. I worry about that, too, like Jake was saying. I mean, that makes me concerned for his chances, and he's 41. But I just don't think White's that talented. He's been knocked out again now cold. You know, any neurologist is going to tell you, you know, when you get concussed like that, you're more vulnerable to get concussed again. Doesn't mean you're going to lose. But,
yeah.
In other words, however vulnerable he was to knock out and knock down shots, you know, Parker almost had him out. Revis dropped him, you know. Joshua took him out, you know, Povetkin took him out. He's even more vulnerable now. So I think, you know, Povetkin could catch him again. He said his game plan the first fight was actually to go with the right hand. It's not as good as his left hook, but he was close to getting it there. And, you know, White's relying on that left shot for his power. You know, if he probably wants to sneak it in, you know, when White's got that thing dropped. It's possible he could land that right hand and Povetkin's left hook's for real. If he gets, you know, I don't know if he'll get a real fair shake on the cards, but I do think he's capable of winning this fight by a decision or a KO. And I'm going to go with him again. It's tough to go with a 41-year-old, even at heavyweight, but I've just never been a believer in what talent. So I have learned, though, with Dillian White, I won't rule out him catching anybody with that left hand, and that includes this fight. He caught Povetkin with it twice last time and dropped him twice, but didn't get him out. But, you know, he's convinced me he can get anybody out with that left hand. So that's not out of the question for White. And, you know, maybe just being younger, he could get a decision, but, you know, based on activity. But I'm going to go with Povetkin again. I just think that even at 41 – He's just got more talent pedigree than White, and I think it should be enough again.
And especially if White comes out tentative, because I do think it'll be a tentative start, but if he's too tentative, then that kind of goes against his style. Like, he jabs and throws the right hand and tries to land bombs with it for the most part. As long as he's in good shape, he usually doesn't hold that much, but... Yeah, I wonder if the, you know, if it's like, well, you're going to just go rush him and say, no, I'm not going to be tentative. I'm just going to jump right on the horse again. Well, that'll get you knocked out probably, but because he's aggressive, but not like overly aggressive until he has you hurt. So, yeah, this is I like the fight, though, in a lot of ways, just because you can make an argument, you know, for both guys, no doubt about it. Anything to add with the conversation we had about the charges for Gervonta Davis? Like I mentioned there, none of them are felony charges. I'm not going to say it's all hearsay either, but anything to add, kind of reading through any of that or hearing what Jake was saying? You know, obviously, you know, you are a lawyer, so it's kind of interesting to hear your take on this.
Yeah, I think that you and Jake are right when you're talking about, you know, these are the criminal charges we're talking about. It's not a good situation. I don't think it's a good situation for Gervonta Davis. Not that they want a conviction or anything, but or have to plead, but they're probably not that worried about the criminal charges in terms of, I don't know, you know, misdemeanors. I don't think these are really, they're not good, but that severe of criminal charges. Like if people, because again, you have non-lawyers or people that don't follow this stuff as closely. You know, we're not dealing with some scenario here where Gervonta Davis is going to be going to jail for any kind of length of time or anything like that here, even if he did. So, you know, you're not worried about anything like that here. Now, my understanding, I believe that was Davis's vehicle that was involved in that collision, wasn't it?
Yes, from my understanding,
looking at it when it first came out, I haven't. You know, Jake gave a good rundown on it, and it's good that he's looked at the legal documents. Like you said, he does a great job reporting this stuff, and he's a good, fair reporter. So I was listening carefully to what he was saying because he does a good job with that, and then I can add the legal interpretation to it. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's criminal charges that they would be overly worried, not that he would want to spend any time in jail or have to pay too much money, but my understanding when this incident was first reported is that there's at least one person that was pretty seriously injured in this accident. And, you know, I thought when I first read about it, it was Gervonta Davis's vehicle. Now, that doesn't mean automatically he's driving, but let's face it. Let's look at the circumstantial evidence does matter even in criminal cases and in civil cases. People
right.
mistakenly sometimes think from TV that it doesn't. It is a valid form of evidence. You know, direct evidence is when somebody actually sees something, and circumstantial evidence is, you know, when all the circumstances suggest a fact and a reasonable person then can conclude that that fact occurred based on the circumstances. So, you know, if it's Gervonta Davis's vehicle, he's obviously a celebrity. You know, he would have some incentive, certainly, if it was his vehicle, to say he wasn't driving and this was a hit and run situation where they tried to leave the accident. I mean, normally, legally, it would have been charged if they had the evidence for that, but they would not have. And a lot of times this is why you do other charges. I mean, usually in my experience, and I run into this a lot in my injury cases, I have one like that right now, I've had many over the years. You know, usually you're concluding, and I'm the plaintiff when I would be like the people bringing the suit on behalf of the injured party. You're seeing those circumstances. You're thinking somebody was drinking and driving, and that's why they hit and ran, okay? So
sure.
That doesn't mean I'm a criminal that they can prove that, but you're thinking, where were these guys? How much were they drinking? I'm going to trace back what they were doing. Now, they won't do that on a DUI or a DWI charge, but – these people that they hit, their civil lawyers will certainly do that. And they've already got a hit and run in your civil case when somebody's, you know, suing you for injuries and fault. And I think, you know, Gervonta Davis has assets. You know, I don't know what insurance he had on the vehicle. If he had it, I assume he had it, but if he didn't, that's even a bigger problem. But if he did, I don't know how much he had. Why I'm saying that is, to me, it's almost, you know, what he's got to worry about. If somebody's seriously injured in that accident and he was the driver, you know, I don't know what his insurance limits are, but he's got assets. I mean, you know, he's going to be pursued, you know,
right.
for all his insurance. You know, if the person's hurt that bad and there's multiple people in this and you know, you'd have to cover all of them for, you know, insurance. And then it could theoretically, if his limits aren't big enough or he didn't have it. He's got assets, so they can go after him, and that would be a situation where they will be able to collect. So that's a worry. It's not that, you know, money's worth more than your freedom, but he's not going to be looking at much jail time with anything if he's guilty
of right.
misdemeanor charges. But that I wonder what the civil status is of
that's
that.
That's what I was
going
to say. Could this be a civil suit, a plea, whatever? It's obviously too early to tell, but that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, and he's got, this seems like he's got legal problems. I mean, unless
right.
you know, he's
yes.
able to prove or put enough doubt that somebody else was driving that vehicle. But it seems to me that under these circumstances, that's going to be kind of difficult. So, again, we'll have to see how it plays out. But, you know, it seems like he's going to have problems with civil liability and you know, with the misdemeanor charges. I mean, is he going to go to trial on this? To say somebody else was driving? I mean, it's not going to be – none of this is going to be a good look that I see.
Yeah, you're right. And that does say in the report 4 people were injured in the incident. Though none were life-threatening, all of them were treated at the Maryland shock trauma. So they did all have to go in. And I do recall that first, I think it was in the Baltimore Sun or something, I do recall them saying that it was serious. We'll see exactly how serious it was. But they all 4 had to be treated. So there had to be, you know, there's something in there. It goes on to say, fortunately, the victims in this case were able to survive the alleged hit-and-run collision with recoverable injuries despite potential for a far worse case scenario. So maybe those reports were off more of a worst-case scenario. Maybe they weren't. Maybe, you know, we are going to find out more about this. It does kind of smell like a civil suit and a plea or whatever. Maybe that wouldn't even be a plea, but a civil suit would probably, whatever you want to say, take care of this scenario. With the insurance.
Yeah, well, the plea would be you have the criminal aspect, which is the hit and run charges, the misdemeanors, and then you have the civil aspect would be people suing Davis for their injuries, which, you know, would be covered by insurance if it's there. But if there's not enough insurance or it's not there, then, you know, he's going to have assets at risk for these
right.
suits. And You did, Chris, analyze correctly. Usually what we look at as personal injury attorneys and insurance companies look at, one of the first things you're looking at were the people admitted on the night of the accident. And, you know, early reports were that these people were admitted to the hospital. That's going to usually, not always, but it's going to give you a little bit of an indication from the outside that the injuries were a little more serious. And there were reports of some serious injuries. So he's got some big problems with that. And the plea would be, you know, if his lawyer tells him, you know, Gervonta, you're not going to be able to beat this as a trial. We'll work a plea deal on the criminal charges with the prosecutors, you know, maybe plea to one, get a few dismissed. That could happen. We don't know. It depends how strong the evidence the prosecutors have as to whether his criminal lawyers would consider a plea deal there. So it's all not good. I mean all of it's not good for Davis. It's hard to say how it all play out, but it's initial signs are it's not particularly good.
All right, John, any other items that you want to touch upon at all while we have you?
Yeah, just briefly, I think mentioned the Derbyev fight from Saturday, you know.
Oh yeah.
This match on paper going in, you know, he knocked Dinas down early and then finished him off later on. You know, Beater Biev's on the wrong side of 35 now. You know, we've seen him perform like this here and there, where he kind of let a guy hang around like that. I mean, he's got a 100% KO percentage to his credit as well, so he ultimately takes care of business. You know, at his best, even now at 36, you know, sometimes he throws combinations to me that, you know, he's about the same height. They were both 205 in the amateurs that actually remind me of Tyson. I mean, there are moments where he does that. I'm not saying everything he does, but that's the best of Beater BF to me. You know, when he's really on or he has his best moments, he can look a bit like a Tyson when he throws some of those shots, some of those power shots. But I you know, some people were talking about, well, Dinas hung around, you know, he was in there. The guy was, you know, he was in a glorified survival mode to me. I mean, you know, we know boxing is the toughest sport, the most dangerous, but I think people need to look at a guy like that. You know, he didn't have any KOs over any credible opponents. So, you know, he, you know, even if he himself was trying to say he was a puncher, you know, I think he had 10 KOs in 21 fights for a light heavyweight, certainly not a great KO percentage. What I'm just saying is, and there's a lot of others like him in these types of fights, that even when they hang around a few rounds, what was he really doing to win the fight? I mean, you know, he wasn't trying to win more rounds. He wasn't trying to get a knockout. So, you know, it was Beter Biev in with a guy who was just kind of trying to hang around, and he finally got him out of there. I'm not going to read too much into it, but I think for perspective, I think people may want to take this as perspective, because sometimes people like to criticize Canelo or be unrealistic about what he could do at light heavyweight, considering he's already knocked out Kovalev. I see a lot of people trying to diminish that now. I mean, how long would this dynasty guy have lasted with Canelo? I don't think he would have lasted maybe as long as he lasted with Beter Biev. And
true.
You know, how much better of an opponent is Billy Joe Saunders? You know, like he's not really a likable guy, but I do think, and he can be boring, but I do think he's got talent. I mean, you know, he's worlds above this Dynas guy. So I'm just saying, unfortunately, with cross promotional stuff, Beter Biev is with Top Rank, and you know, Canelo, of course, looks like he may end up being with Eddie Hearn. That seems to be pretty close to fruition from the way he's talking. But again, what I'm saying is, they're not going to fight anyway. But I don't think it's that, you know, Canelo is like afraid of him or anything like that. I mean, you know, and I'm not saying that wouldn't be a tough fight, and Beter Biev, he is obviously dangerous, and I like him a lot as a fighter. But I don't think that's something that, you know, Canelo is afraid of, and I don't think that's an unwinnable fight for Canelo by any means. I'm not saying whether I would or wouldn't, but I don't think it'd be a fight I'd hesitate to pick him in. So this idea that Beter Biev is a boogeyman that Canelo is afraid of, I don't think that's necessarily reality. It's just typical TV and promotional stuff. You know, it just may be something that doesn't make sense like that. But I don't think it's something that Canelo is afraid of. Even if he's talking about, I'm comfortable at super middleweight right now. Canelo said all kinds of stuff like that. Remember, he said it when he was fighting at 154 pounds and 156, and then he's fighting Golovkin twice and beating him the second time. You know, then he knocks out Kovalev. In other words, he was talking about needing to fight at 155, and he knocked out Kovalev. So, you know, I respect Canelo a lot as a fighter, and he's good. I think overall he's good for the sport. But when he says some of these types of things, I kind of take it with a grain of salt. You know, it's just kind of promotional stuff. In that sense, I think he knows how to promote who he's going to be fighting coming up. He wants to sell this 168 thing right now at the moment. So that's what he's focused on, just like when he was focused on, you know, selling things at 154 and 155 pounds in the past.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. Very good way to put it. All right, John, you have yourself a good night. I appreciate you taking time out.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for having me. Enjoyed it as always.
Yes, sir. Take it easy, man. Enjoy the fights this weekend.
Too. Have a good night.
All right. All righty. John, as always, fun to talk boxing with. Like I said, great boxing mind. To another great boxing mind, I see Carcino. Going to go to him in just a second. We're going to talk about a variety of stuff. This Povetkin and White fight really has me, like I mentioned earlier, talking to I think both of them. I'm so on the fence. I really am. I mean, I really think that Dillian White was getting hit with several flush shots before knocking Povetkin down. I think that was clear. I kind of feel like John said, it was basically like a very close to even fight. I think a lot of people just see the knockdowns and be like, oh, he was dominating the fight. Well, hold on now. He wasn't. I mean, those left hooks and overhand rights did land before the big one, the left hook that actually knocked him out. I'm still on the fence with it, no doubt about it. There are some interesting fights, though, for the rest of the weekend. There's some prospect-level, kind of contender-level stuff on the card. Ortiz is actually going against Eduardo Baez, I think it is. That's a plus 100 to minus 130. Leonardo Baez is a plus 190 going against Carlos Rodriguez, who's a minus 250. That's the lowest, though. Most of them have been, I think that's the lowest. Maybe, let me check, actually. I've seen a lot of 320s, minus 345. Though there's a minus 245. So there is something about that. Amanda Serrano fights, what is that, Thursday on Ring City USA, the NBC sports sports network. So that's something that you may want to keep an eye on. Of course, there is the co-feature, James Metcalf and Ted Cheeseman, which that may not mean a whole lot over here, but it means a lot in the UK. But Metcalf, minus 175, Cheeseman, plus 155, plus 130, somewhere in that realm. And right now, Dillian White is a minus 330, minus 345, minus 360. I don't see a 3-1 for Povetkin, but I do see a plus 270 at five dimes. So for those folks out there, like myself, who think there's a good chance that Povetkin can summon enough strength to do it all over again, there is some money to be made. That is for sure. I'll give my take on that in just a little bit. I do think a guy like Jesse Vargas or even a Sebastian Formella or especially like a Mean Machine, Pavlovskis, Avanesian we mentioned, I think these are quality fights for Ortiz Jr. if in fact, which many people think, you know, won't happen, the Crawford fight. I mean, even if you look at it, he just got in it was a tough fight while it lasted, and he would have to only take like a week off and get right back into camp if in fact, I mean, that's, let's say he takes 2 weeks off, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I mean, we don't know the exact date that Crawford's going to have. Maybe it does get pushed to June, but right now it's May. May 29th is something I've heard. Maybe May 1st. I don't know, but you wonder if he turned right back around after getting hit with some shots that, you know, he's not going to be able to get hit with against Terrence Crawford. I do think some of the names like Jesse Vargas, though, Mean Machine, whatever, I like those fights for him for progression, and that's what you want to get him back out sometime this summer and get him a good fight. I just don't see him turning around in 8 to 10 weeks. I know Canelo just did it, but he barely even got touched, you know, against Callum Smith and then didn't get touched basically in his last fight, so we can't really line that up like that's a perfect example. A variety of other things we'll talk about. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Carcino into the fold. What's going on, Carcino? How the hell are you, man?
I've been all right, man. I've been pretty good, man. Busy. Super busy. So
that's a common theme when we're talking with Carcino. He's always a busy guy. Got a variety of things going on. What'd you think of the young buck, Virgil Ortiz, and his performance? You know, did we find anything? Did we learn anything from it? And also, what's next? A fight like Jesse Vargas or some of these other guys I name would be interesting. One thing that stood out to me, and I've mentioned this a couple times talking to people today, is you got to love when it's not a title fight or a big, big fight when the crowd still comes out for a young fighter. Maybe I'm just appreciating more because COVID's, you know, coming to some form of conclusion and we're starting to get fans back. But overall, what'd you think just in general of Virgil Ortiz?
I think he's, you know, he was the perfect fighter to beat Hooker. You know, he falls to the wall. He's young. He's very confident. Those type of guys can take the fight to Hooker and, you know, really get him out of there. A guy, you know, he does good with distance. And if you're dealing with a young guy that's going to, like, come right at you, ball, and to come right in with force, Hooker's not going to be able to withstand that. He'll fold and buckle under the pressure. And I felt that was the perfect matchup for him. So I think that was a good, like, showcase and coming out fight for him. You know, I feel that down the road, everybody's out here in Teofimo Lopez. I'm hearing all kind of names thrown out there. But the door is open. You know, he's somebody that brings the excitement in. Like you said, people were talking about him. And I was like, wow, I was shocked. Like, even on social media, like, people in the boxing world was talking about him already. I'm like, wow, that's a shock. You know, I'm like, Maurice Hooker was a champion for a long time, and nobody was mentioning him. But Ortiz, man, I'm like, this guy just comes in, he wears the fight, and all these people I've never heard from before just pop right up. I'm like, wow, that's impressive, man, because he's making a name for himself doing it through the ring, you know, more than instead of doing social media. He's doing it in the boxing ring. You know, all these other guys, they mostly are fighting on social media and making fights. And, oh, I've got a big fight coming up, announcement coming in 2 days. Then you hear nothing, and it's just tricky. Some other right. It's just some nonsense, and they don't realize that. Yeah, you're getting attention on social media, but these are not the people that's going to watch your fight. Boxing fans, they don't even care about the circus, especially if you keep getting them sucked into it. You get a boxing fan sucked into some back and forth, and nothing happens.
They get bitter quick.
Right, they'll get pissed, and they'll be like, ah, screw you. Now they don't like you enough to even want to care. They want to care about people who are actually fighting, doing stuff in the ring. That's where your whole legacy, everything about you is going to be defined in the ring. Let your team do your – you need to be training and in the ring. That's where you're going to make your money. That's where the bread's made. So if Floyd Mayweather could do all the stuff he do, but – Floyd wouldn't be doing that. Like, Floyd don't do social media. He wouldn't even know the password to get into his account.
That's a true statement there.
Yeah, because he didn't know it. I remember right there, he didn't know it. He would ask P. Rilla.
Somebody get me into this account.
Rilla, what's my password? Like, he didn't even know what his Twitter thing was or anything. So... I mean, it was just crazy at that time. But the thing is, that's not his game, you know. The UFC Floyd on there, but all those guys on his team, they're running his social media. You know, he's worried about doing his job. He got to win fights. He got to perform in the ring. So he could do all the talking, the flash and everything, but when the fight, he got to show and prove. So the fact that he couldn't do that beforehand, you know, there you go. You know, it detailed and fell in comparison to everything else. But, yeah, I'm not touching that Dylan White fight. I'm not touching that. I'm not betting that fight at all. That's a fight. What's that, Povetkin, man? You think Povetkin got one more shot in him, though?
I think he actually does. It's true, though. I agree. I'm probably going to touch it, but – I don't want to because it really could go either way, dude. Both these dudes could fall off the cliff tonight of their career too, or not tonight, but this weekend. I mean, they could just fall off and be like, "Nope, you finally hit it. You've taken too much damage."
I think Dylan White's gonna win, and I think that's the only reason this fight was put back together. You know, he just felt he got caught. You know, he could possibly get caught again, but that's the thing with Dylan White. You know, he gets knocked out all the time. I mean, you know, he gets knocked down, he keeps getting back up. But, you know, when that stuff ain't in your system, and then you got to go ahead and perform, and that's going to hinder your getting up when that stuff ain't
right, exactly, and recouping.
Right, exactly. Before he's getting popped down and popping back up. So, you know, that's going to change the narrative a lot. Now, I've been caught into March Madness, so that's, you know, that's where my whole mind has been for the past 3-4 days. That's why I'm like, I'm always busy. Now I got the betting app on the phone where the actual casino that I go to place my bets, I can place them now from the phone, from the app. So they've opened up
that's
the betting
trouble.
App. Oh, yeah. You just gave an unlimited supply of crack to a crack house. to a crackhead, brother. I'm like, oh my God, you build a crack house right next door to a crackhead? Oh man. Now,
yeah, it's a tough fight. It's a tough fight. I mean, no doubt about that. I really don't know which way to go. I haven't done my prediction just yet. What would you think about a Virgil Ortiz Jr. and Jesse Vargas fight at this point?
I think he knocked out Jesse Vargas in about nine rounds, probably a little shorter than that. I say it'll be a great fight. It'll be a great fight, but I think Jesse gets stopped in probably about seven, eight, about nine rounds. I think he'll be dropped a couple of times before, you know, they actually stop it. Jesse seems to – the problem with Jesse is, and this is a problem with most amateurs, they're great amateur tough fighters, man, in the amateur. They put up great fights, they tough, and they gritty, they come hard. And the problem with fighting guys like that is the fact that they have tendencies that they picked up from the amateurs that they should have shed it away at the pros and keep it with them. And it ends up hindering them fight. And you're like, man, you know, like, normally you would have shed this by now. You know, you've been pro for a while. You know, some people who bounce in the ring too much. You know, Bonas Monterosa used to do that a lot. He would get on a foul, like start bouncing around. You fight a smart fighter or a real seasoned pro, they'll use that against you and take you apart. They'll use all these little hitches that you use that you should have gotten rid of out of there. And Jesse Vargas is another. You know, he has this little rhythm about himself. You know, Leo Santa Cruz had a tale that he would always do, you know, from the amateurs, where he starts shaking his gloves and, you know, and he does a rock. It's like almost telling somebody what you're about to do. And as the amateurs, and once you go pro, they would normally work that out of your system to where you don't use these things no more. You know, you've got a whole new style, you know, you've evolved. And, you know, because there's not too many teachers in the game. You got most of the people who are just coaching you, like, all right, way to go. Do a couple more laps and hit the bag. But there are not too many teachers or educators of the actual fight out there anymore. So, you know, most of those have passed away. And the people that they taught, most of them have not become trainers. And they just, right now, they just like, look, I'm here to get my money. This guy doesn't want to learn. So be it. So what's happening is that they're taking these faults into the ring, and Jesse is another one that has, he telegraphs a lot of what he does in combinations and everything. You could learn Jesse Vargas' combinations in two rounds, if not three. And he's going to repeat those over and over again. He gets into a flow where he's just rocking, and he goes right back, and his chin is in the air, and he falls to the wall. And he's going to give you a tough fight. A very tough fight. But when you're in there with a guy that can, you know, and they full of confidence, they're young, strong, and, I mean, Jesse's been in there in a couple of fights where he probably realized, you know, I've been in a couple of wars, more too many, you know. When I talk to Jesse Vargas, we got to interview him. Probably we can get him on again. Get Jesse back on the show and get him on here. Chris, when we were talking to him, I think last time, he had that fight coming up. I think it's just, did he fight Manny Pacquiao? Or I think he fought Pacquiao.
Yeah, you're right. I think it was the Pacquiao or Bradley, one of the two.
Yeah, I think it was Pacquiao. We had him on for the Pacquiao fight. And he was in a totally different mode than I talked to him after. Everything is about his daughter. You know, he's about school schedule and picking him up. So he's thinking more of boxing as a job more than, you know,
sure,
this is my life. You know, like, he's mostly thinking like, hey, you know, I'll take the fight, you know, get paid, check, and all that stuff. And then, you know, after that, you know, I go take, I make sure my daughter, I check her homework, make sure her homework is together. And I like, and that's great things, you know, parenting and all this stuff. But it's like, man, you're not wrapped around the moment. You know, like, I want to be world champion. You know, I want, this is my shot. I got another shot at it. You know, these things are not, like, resonating anymore. It's like resonating to a job, and I felt like he was at that point in his career where he's like, I'm cool with just getting the money. You know, I'm going to put up a fight, and I'm going to go all out, but, you know, it's about the money. So that's how I felt about Jesse after this. And I saw when he fought Mikey Garcia. You know, it was another great fight where he hurt Mike. A couple times in that fight, you know, but he kept doing the same thing over and over. And Mikey figured him out, and he had no answer. After Mikey figured him out, and he's like, okay, I got him. I got him figured out. I know his combination. He couldn't adjust. And then, you know, he just gave it all he had. But at this point, he's been in one too many of those wars, those knockout dragouts. And at this point, older Ortiz, to me, that's another good fight for him. It would definitely put him up higher on the map. They should make the fight. I'm all for it. Now,
yeah, I mean, there's no point in rushing to a Crawford fight or something like that. Or maybe you do think he should take Crawford. Well, where do you stand on that? Because that was a lot of talk with Crawford outside the ring on Saturday.
I saw that. I mean, look, anybody who fights Terrence Crawford is going to get knocked out. That's just awesome. I mean, his style for Terrence, he does not need Terrence Crawford right now. No. Mm-mm. Wrong fight for him. Too young. I could see a Fernando Vargas situation all over again. Vargas Trinidad all over again, and his career be through. No, we don't need that. You need to bring him up slowly. You know, and I saw Fernando Vargas talking about it, too. You know, whenever the fighter is, like, is coming up and people think he's doing too much too fast, like Ryan Garcia, they stick a camera right in front of Vargas' face. He's become the poster child of a fighter that was moving up too fast. And main events is like, hey, we're making money off of him. Let's keep throwing him in the ring. This guy likes
right.
to fight. We give him the fights. He says, of course, what fighter is going to tell you he's not ready?
Yeah, it's true.
You know, but you
give him the money, he'll be ready.
Fighter. Right, but the thing is, main events is just so greedy. And just at that time, they didn't have any real big stars. All these big stars was like were gone. You know, they lost Holyfield. They had all these big the money guys were gone. For main event. So they were like, Parker, this guy just came out of nowhere. And now we got a belt. You know, let's keep putting this guy in. You know, we can keep getting this guy fights. And Kathy just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. So all of a sudden, you know, when they get all of these fighters together and they start trying to put these matches and bouts together, they got to look at, okay, who's licensing the fight? Terrence Crawford's coming to an end of his contract. He may not re-sign back with Bob Arum Top Rank. He might just be independent. You know, he doesn't deal with Bob really anymore. Now his team pretty much deal with Todd. You know, you never know how that fight can go. So some goes to the cards, Terrence Crawford. But here's the thing about Terrence Crawford. Nobody's making it to the cards. You know, see, that's the difference. From fighting Terrence Crawford and fighting Errol Spence, that fight go to the cards, you messing with Errol. You messing with Terrence, there's a chance you're going to sleep. And that's what people like to see. And when they start talking about Bud and all that, Bud's knocking people out. And they're like, oh, well, he ain't fought nobody. I'm like, well, Errol wasn't fighting nobody, and still, he wasn't knocking some people out. You know, so let's see. I'm like, if you put Mikey Garcia in there with Terrence Crawford, I don't think Mikey survived. Mikey went into survival mode, but no, he wouldn't be able to survive with Terrence. Terrence knew how to get you out of there.
I really hope he doesn't re-up. I really hope he stays. Do the Mikey route where you're just independent, maybe a fight by fight. I really hope he doesn't re-up.
I had told somebody that. I said Mikey Garcia is going to be the most successful fighter probably in the game. And I'm like, people are going to be like, how do you figure that? I'm like, him and Canelo. I'm like, Canelo's going to do it for everything he's won in the ring. Mikey can lose and still make money. Mikey's going to find a way to keep making money because to him, this is a business. Mikey Garcia has no real interest in doing anything other than, you know, this is it for him. He's cool with just making some money. He never dreamed of being world champion. His brothers was all into boxing. Boxing was just in his family line. So, you know, naturally they taught him how to basically survive, but it's not life or death for him, you know, like, and he talks like that, you know, it provided a living for him, but it's not all he even wants to do. He wants to do other things. So he's about 2-3 fights from retirement anyway, you know, so it's a,
he looks about 30 pounds overweight too.
Yeah. You know, so when you're dealing with all the terms and everything and how things are being played out, and when you start to see it, you know, Mikey Garcia is one of those guys that he could, one, he's solid enough to where he could win fights. He has been taught the fundamentals, the sound, the basics. So they give him an advantage over people like Adrian Broner. You know, Broner's all athleticism and instinct, and he had all this. You know, he's more like a basketball player trying to go in there and box, you know, and land some shots. But eventually, the person who's sound is going to break down the athletic person all the time. Like 90% of the time, you see the athletic guys get in there and get beat. You're seeing Robert Easter starting to lose fights now. Because when your athleticism goes and you don't have any real boxing to stand on, you know, this becomes a problem. And it's happening repeatedly. So seeing Robert Easter lose fights, he shouldn't have been losing. And he was in fights and knockout, drag-out fights in the easy bout. And I'm like, why are you in this situation? Like, it doesn't even make sense for you to be in this situation. Like, this was the easy one. And then I tried to teach him then. I was like, you're giving up your height for no reason. I'm like, you could be the Thomas Hearns of this division and just root. Because you got the height, you can keep making 135. You're a real 135. And he's like, I can make 135 with ease. I'm like, well, then you need to stay here because you're like 6 foot tall. At 135, I'm like, with a jab like that, I'm like, dude, all you got to do is keep your weight and work on your boxing. But when you got money coming in, you're hanging out with Adrian Broner, you know, silly dancing, wearing clothes, and then it's hard to focus when you have all these distractions going on. You know, me, I'm older, so to me, I see it as silly. You know, so I mean, we could instantly see that, but then you got to look at them, they're young.
Oh, yeah.
So it's
especially
like,
with
okay,
money in their pocket, young, too. That's a whole different ballgame.
Right. You come from being broke, you get some money, you're going to want to buy stuff and do things, and you really don't have an idea yet of where you're going or what you need to be doing. And you really just don't have a clue yet. So, I mean, once you get seasoned in the game, then that's when you start to really, you know, you get older and you realize that it was a bunch of nonsense. Because everybody thinks they know the world at 22 years old. I know it all. Then when you're 32, you go, Jesus Christ.
I didn't know shit. Yeah.
So everybody got the answer to 22.
Yeah.
So
yeah, people forget that. People forget that. I mean, if you can make really bad decisions from 18 to 22 or even 25 in a normal run-of-the-mill life, per se, of course, when you get a little fame and some money, you're gonna make mistakes even more potentially, and they just get highlighted more. But it's funny when people say, man, in your position, how could you do that? Well, actually, it's more of a risk for the average person to do it because they'll end up in jail. You know what I mean? Like that, actually, you know, I don't know. It's kind of funny how a lot of people just point fingers and judge from the sidelines. Not like we don't point fingers, but you try to at least level with everything and put perspective behind it in general. Any other items that you want to get to? We were talking earlier about Gervonta Davis and like 14 different misdemeanor charges that were put on him. Kind of seems like that might be a civil suit potentially thing. Any other items you want to talk about?
Mainly the fact that a lot of people thought he was going to jail and he's going to be facing 7 years. I'm like, no, dude, they're gonna pay their way out of this. That's fine.
Right.
Gervonta is, but he needs to grow up because this little slap on the wrist or whatever is a serious slap. Because now, what this does is it makes it like, okay, we're giving you a chance. Now, if you do anything else, you're going down. Because this counts as something on your record that they could pull up, even though it's a misdemeanor. All these, like, you know, they're not felony, but they're hard class, like class A misdemeanors.
Yeah.
So even though you can avoid jail time, then they'll set up some type of program. He's going to have to meet and check all these marks, you know, and if he don't, then, you know, it's back to jail. Or, you know, and that's the thing, if you're not changing your environment, you're putting yourself in a situation where you're going to be right back in the same position you were just in. That's why I tell people all the time, like, if you're going to be like, hey, man, I ain't doing this no more. But I'm like, you're in the same crowd, you're in the same bunch of people, that when you hang around with them, something bad happens, and 9 times out of 10, you're in trouble.
Yeah, whether you did
like,
it or not, you're in the scene, and people are going to remember who you were there regardless. It's happened to many of people over the years.
I know. I mean, you look at the running back for the Dallas Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott, another person who couldn't learn. It's like, he's like, hey, it wasn't my fault. It's not about fault. It's about it happened, and you're there. Nobody should be having to discuss fault. You know, it's like, do you want to be in the equation again? I'm like, it only took me about, what, 2 times in my entire life where I said, okay, I can't hang out here.
Yeah, right.
Now I drive my own car. It's like none of these problems exist anymore. I'd be like, nah, I'm driving. Right, that only happens once. I'm driving my car from now on. This would be like, no, I'm not riding with anybody anymore. I'm like, I'm riding with them. They decide to go and fight some people. I'm like, hey, y'all are going to drive me off. I'm like, look.
Pulling over on the freeway. You're like, guys, what are you doing? You're pulling over on the freeway? Why are we pulling over on the freeway? Nah, dude. You know, oh, man. Those scenarios that you put yourself in.
Right. Then they want to get out and fight, and then they – destruction of property, all this crap. I got out and called me a cab. I'm like, look, I have no time to be party to this. I don't like going to court, sitting in the courtroom.
Right.
That's not what I want to do. My life is not designed to be sitting in a courtroom. It's when you're spending your own money and going down the drain. It's cool when mommy and daddy are spending their money. But you spending your own money in court, the money's going in the wrong direction. And that's what I showed a lot of players. I mean, a lot of players in the game and athletes and entertainers. I'm like, it's already targets on your back because you're an athlete or entertainer and you're in the public eye. People are always going to want to try to get stuff off it that, you know, that you worked hard to get. So whether it's a manager, somebody with a get-rich-quick business scheme, they want you to invest in a new toaster, whatever. Somebody wants a piece of you because they feel like you could do something for them. So you got to look out. You got women out here that are going to do anything that you ask them to do. And, I mean, women right now are so desperate. They're doing stuff on the Internet. They're hooking up with guys all online. It's a girl telling me she loved me just off of photos he saw of me on Instagram. I'm like, Jesus Christ. You love me already? Damn. That's crazy. So that just shows you the mind state of people out there. Their brains ain't thinking. They're not working. They don't even look at what they're doing. It's stupid. It's like, how can you sit there and teach your kids and tell them they should respect themselves, and then you're out there on Instagram in your underwear dancing in front of a camera? How are they supposed to take you serious? Like, get
statement.
Out of here. You're ruining mama's shot.
Yeah.
Play the song back over again for mama. And that's what's wrong with these fighters. They fall into these pitfalls and traps because I know what it's like. I work second shift. You know, you lock down for half the day. When you're out, everybody's asleep. So the only women you see basically are on the job. You know, so 2 months of being in there with just them, all them women will start looking like Beyonce.
Yeah, right? Or when you see someone else in real public, real time, you're like, oh, my God, that is Beyonce,
yeah, I'm like,
whichever.
She's gorgeous.
Yeah,
she's looking real good today. Right, you get back in the real world, you're like, oh, God, I can't believe I said this. You know, it's like, what was happening to me that day? They're like, I don't know.
Well,
so,
good luck with your tournament, the Sweet 16 stuff. Who you got cutting down the net, sir?
Well, I want to jinx it. So.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Let's just say my teams are still in it.
I will tell you, I
did pick Aberdeen Christian, so I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
Oral Roberts, I had them on one of my sheets going two rounds. And I did pick Loyola Chicago over Illinois on one sheet because they're better than Illinois. Illinois is a fake number one. Everybody here seems to know that. But I'm like, man, I thought I was the only one. It was people here in Illinois. Like, I would never bet on Illinois. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, man, I thought I was sneaking people with that one. Okay. So I didn't have Oregon winning. No, I did have Oregon winning, beating Iowa, because I knew Iowa, all they had was Garza. So I knew that wasn't going to last. It was USC. That's who supposed to have been gone. I had USC gone in the first round, and they still around ruining my sheet.
I'm surprised that Oklahoma State going down, too. I thought Oklahoma State was going to go. They look so good down the stretch of the season.
Bad matchup. I mean, Oklahoma State had one of the best players in the world, but it was a bad matchup.
Beating them either. It's like, hey, you may want to, like, the last 8 minutes of that game, they barely even gave them the ball. It's crazy.
Yeah, it was. I don't know if it was some internal things going on there, but that's why he's out.
And they were young, too. And once you get into the tournament young, that usually catches up with you.
Yep. Michigan is doing what I thought they would do.
I wonder if they get old boy back.
So we're going to see
if they get their boy back.
Yeah. And I want to tell you my sheet so bad, but I just like, don't jinx it.
I understand.
I got a 16 on the NBA today. I got $16,000 I could win on this parlay. Jeez.
Dang.
Yeah, only thing I had to do was pick eight picks. I put eight picks down for $100. I can win $16,000 tonight.
Good luck with that, man. Eight things got to go right. Let's hope it does.
Over and unders and team wins. I just know the team that's going to screw me up is the Golden State Warriors. Oh, do I know they're going to screw me over. I can feel it in my bones. They cost me the last sheet. So I'm like, man, they cost my last sheet. Them and me, the Pistons and Bulls game, we were doing great. I'm like, all we got to do is cover the spread, fellas. And then they get blown out the entire fourth quarter. I said, oh, my God. I got to leave. to anybody but the bull.
I got this buddy, every time you go to Vegas, the last night he'll make a bet. It'll be like six things got to go right, and it'll be like this Vegas trip never happened. He says it every time. Like, dog, if six things have to go right, you know, like, you can't just make it all disappear. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he does it every time.
It's great. But this is great, though, because now that I got the app, I can just bet from the app. I don't have to leave the house. So now I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. Now I don't have to go to the casino, and next thing you know, I'm shooting dice because I'm waiting on the games to be over.
That's true. That's a good point.
It's
like when you go
right
to Target for a couple things. Going to Target for a couple things, next thing you come out with $200 worth of stuff. So that's a good point, just having the app at home.
Because I was ready to choke this guy on the dice table. That's what I'm saying. When I shoot dice, I just want a private table to shoot dice. I do not need an audience or a crowd. Because I'm like, when I meet those dice to come back around, give me like just 2-3 guys on the table. Because I was going to choke this one guy so bad. I'm like, dude, if you throw the dice, just grab them randomly and just flicking them. I'm like, at least try to set some up. I'm like, you throwing them too quick. I'm still making bets down here.
All right, hey, buddy. Well, good luck with your picks. Okay, what were you going
to
say?
Oh, no, I was like, he was like, he didn't even know he needed one more number to hit so he could make them all. And then I'm like, we would have been rolling. But, we'll definitely talk about that because Mike Tyson turned down the Holyfield fight for 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he says he's not working with Charles Triller anymore. So I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, we're going to find out and see what happens with that because it's kind of all over the place because today he's like, well, actually it's on, but it's going to happen differently now. But it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I'm like, Holyfield's been training for about a year for this fight. That's why they had him back training. Tyson was doing his one fight to build the momentum for it with Bruce Jones. Now they got the momentum going for it. So now it's like, okay, well, now you got momentum. So now all you need is to actually have, I knew the fight was going to take place. They're going to make money. And I'm like, Tyson's getting $25 million. So I'm like, so imagine what Holyfield's getting. He's getting about $25 right along with Mike. So I don't understand what are the odds or what are they negotiating. Because everybody in the free world is going to buy it. They don't care. That's the thing. Nobody cares about how old anybody is anymore, Chris.
That's for sure.
That's out the window. All they know is Tyson and Holyfield. They're fighting again since the bite. They've been around each other thousands of times.
Yeah, he's going to fight them again.
Right, they're acting like it's the first time they've seen them, but they're like, you never know. Mike might fight him again. I'm like, oh, man.
Right.
I'm like, this fight's going to sell $100 million just off the conversation alone. The casuals, that's all they know. Of Mike Tyson's career is he bit Evander Holyfield.
And it'll knock a mother effer out. It's true.
Yep. All they know
buddy,
really about
Tyson. One, man.
All right, bud. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Good luck with your picks this weekend, man. It all starts back up Saturday.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. Take it easy, Carcino.
All right. Take it easy, bro.
Yep. Peace. Of course, Carcino for life. You already know the channel, but if you didn't, there you go. Someone actually messaged me about that I didn't get talk about the Ring City USA. Sometimes when it is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday stuff, you do kind of forget about that, but I wasn't completely out of the realm there. That fight with Israel Gonzalez and Jose Martinez was a good fight. I like that fight. I had, it got called a draw. It was 96-94. One of the cards for Gonzalez. The other two were, I believe, 95-95, both of them, obviously. That was a good back and forth fight. I had it about 6-4 for Gonzalez. 5-4, 1-5, I was okay with. You know, it was good. Gonzalez was just kind of boxing well, using uppercuts and body work. And the fight started heating up in the second or third round. It was a good fight. I had the first three rounds to Gonzalez, the next three rounds to Martinez. I thought he was winning the rounds, maybe not by a large margin, but he was. A lot of give and take. The roundhouse right was landing really well. And you could also see Gonzalez was starting to hold a lot. He was getting tired. But I couldn't figure it out. It was like three, four rounds in, he was starting to hold. I'm like, is he already gassed? But I did think he made a nice run. You know, by the seventh and eighth, he was still holding, but he was landing and not just, you know, just hanging on for dear life. So I thought he closed out the fight a little bit better. The eighth round, midway, both guys were just landing super hard. Gonzalez was kind of mixing the in outside game, like I said, boxing well, and then, you know, coming forward and landing bobs. And then also, there was an upset Angel, what was it, Fierro? I can't remember that guy's name, but he beat a guy that some people were high on a while back, Alberto Machado. Machado dropped him, what, twice, I think, right? In the early rounds. And Angel came up, ended up knocking him out, where is it? Sixth round. And, I mean, he really showed a damn good chin early, you know, got back up, showed that, you know, I'm good, we're good. And then he just went after the body. Great, great body work. And it definitely paid off. It started to, you know, wear down Machado. And I think it was like a left hand, I think is what finished it off. So I thought a good card. I mean, that was a fill-in opponent, so I liked the card. I watched a little bit of those six-rounders or whatever. Didn't score them or anything like that, but that was a good card. And like I said, sometimes when it's a show box or, you know, it's already been, you know, we've had action since then, I either miss it or – but I did plan on doubling back when it came to that. But just speaking of Tyson – it's kind of back and forth. You know, Team Holyfield's talking about he rejected it. And then, like he said, Carcino said, you know, it was actually for Memorial Day weekend. And he came out and just went after Triller and said, you know, we're not involved with anything Triller. He was really all about it. Like, he really went out of his way to say, don't get the two confused type thing. You know, I am not part of them. Please don't put me in that category. I'm going to do my own thing. Cause you know, he's got this league. That was kind of the whole thing from his perspective. And you know, to be honest with you, with Triller, there's a lot of money invested, you know, and a lot of attention that's getting with this Triller. It actually just got that versus, series where you match up, either a lot of it's been rap or R&B. There was actually a really good one of my favorite, actually, since the beginning of it. One of my favorite ones with Ghostface and Raekwon. That was awesome. That was really, really fun. And just a great pair to match those up. Anyway, they took over that franchise. But anyway, it seemed like, well, shit, $25 million. My point is, finish that. My point was, with Triller, they can say whatever the hell sold the pay-per-view. You know, they said they did 1.6 million. Whether they did that or not, who knows? We know it got a lot of attention. We know they have a ton of influencers. We know that they have a lot of different acts that are going to perform. If you look at the one coming up April 17th and then the one with Teofimo, the, you know, especially during a pandemic, even though it's lessening now, people are still inside to an extent, right? So, you know, that model can work for a while. It kind of matters, hey, like, I get to see all these musical acts and some fights or whatever, yeah, I'll pay $50 for it or whatever. My point is, you know, they announced that Jake Paul made up half of the pay-per-views. Now, I don't know if they can actually get that exact number, like their analytics say, yep, this was Jake Paul. Are they going off the age? Are they going up? Did they question, hey, who are you buying this pay-per-view? Before you buy it, do this survey. Are you doing it for Mike? Are you doing it for Jake Paul? You know, I don't know how they actually figured out pay-per-view buys, and half of them were that. So it's a little funky, and maybe whether it's $25 million or not, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't $25 million. But if it did $1.6 million, I could see why Tyson would want more than $25 million. So it's like, well, shit, you're saying it did 1.6. I want more money this time around. Obviously, if me and Roy Jones did 1.6 with what's the sales on the undercard, then me and Holyfield are going to do way more. So maybe they put that out like, well, it was half Jake Paul, so we're just going to go with Jake Paul. I don't know. It's a little funky. It's a little funky. Now Tyson is out there saying, no, it's back on. It's going to be, you know, it's funny because you could just order like a normal pay-per-view. You don't even need the Triller app. So that always kind of threw me off. So I don't really know about the reporting. We know it did numbers, but we really don't know the exact. And maybe that's part of it. It's like, well, dude, if you're telling me that shit did 1.6, me and Holyfield are going to knock it out the park. So maybe that's part of it. I have no clue. I have no clue. But Tyson did say the fight is still on. You know, it's going to take place here. It's going to take place there. I don't really know. I don't have a lot of interest in it. For those who do, more power to you. I'm not ripping you. But I don't know. You know, it's kind of he says it's back on, though. I mean, he was actually saying today that it's May 29th. The trilogy's back on. I've also heard it's in September or August. Some other country. So I really don't know. This one was supposedly Hard Rock Stadium late May. And maybe, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of thought that Teofimo was going to be the undercard when it first got announced. You know, his like, okay, that'll be that. So it's kind of funky. I really don't know, you know, but there is some other cool news. You know, a Mike Tyson movie, with Jamie Foxx anyway, has been talked about for a while. There is a Mike Tyson movie, and there's plenty of documentaries and all that. But it sounds like this from BoxingScene.com that a biopic limited series with Jamie Foxx and Martin Scorsese involved. So they're going to have, you know, obviously Jamie Foxx doing it with Scorsese with some kind of creative role, whether it's producer or director or whatever. But it says there's no television or streaming deal for the series just yet. They're expecting a bidding war. So he said, I've been looking to tell my story for quite some time with the recent launch of Legends Only League, and that's what I was talking about, is League, and the excitement for my fans following the return. Now feels like the perfect moment. I look forward to collaborating with Martin, Antonio, and Jamie and the entire creative team, yada, yada, yada. He did say Hulu's coming out with, you know, an 8-episode Iron Mike that is, I guess you could, a lot of people say unauthorized, you know. The announcement to do an unauthorized miniseries about my life, he says, is unfortunate. We've kind of seen streaming services kind of pick up the story like, oh, they're doing one? Okay, we'll do one. And that happens in you know, film productions, you know, huge, you know, promotional companies where they'll just be like, hey, there's a war movie in there. Okay, let's develop one and put it out either before it or after it or whatever. So you've seen that in the past. There's no really big thing there, but that's enough of an update, I'd say. Okay, I'm going to go out to Portland 503, see what's going on with Portland. All right. You're live on Ropadove Radio. What's going on, Portland? How the hell are you, man?
Mexicanos al grito de guerra, el acero apretado y el rigor, y tiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón.
Hey, yo, what up, what up, what up, Chris? Hey, yo, I'm doing good here in beautiful sunny Oregon, man. It looks the over here, man, it looks so bright, man. It looks nice, you know. So I you know what I mean? I'm excited for the spring weather, man. It's been a hell of a winter, man. I can't wait for the spring weather. But I'm hoping to, you know, hope you're doing good, Chris. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. The weather has definitely been good of the last, say, 4 to 5 days. It's kind of rainy. It's kind of Portlandish, Seattleish right now for the next couple of days. But it is nice knowing that we're headed towards April and that cold weather's gone.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, man, because this year, man, I got to say it was a little too cold for me, man. It was getting cold. For some reason, it felt a lot colder this year. Bro, let's get into it, man. And if I could recap real quick, man, Estrada Gonzalez happened about like 2 weeks ago. You know, Estrada got the nod there, man. And, you know, if I could say something, man, when things like that happen, a biased judge, man, I can't lie, man. If it's on our side and we won, we got the win, man, I'm excited. You know what I mean? I got no complaints about it. Obviously, it hurts there's people out there that think Gonzalez won. I believe, Chris, I believe you thought Gonzalez won. But, you know, when things like that happen, it's the theatrics of boxing is what I love about it, you know what I mean? And if I could explain it that way, you know what I mean, like how it gets everybody rallied up. And you know what I mean? Because it's like, face it, bro, he was pretty much in Mexico, you know what I mean? That shit was in Texas. It was, you know what I mean? Like, you had to know something was up, man. That's why, I mean, Paulie said it. I mean, anybody that, you know, like, I mean, anybody think that Sanders, like, with the Canelo fight, like, Sanders should know that, you know, a decision is not, you know, in the horizon for him. So, you know what I mean?
Right.
But when things like that happen, like, you know what I mean? So, when things like that happen, like, I like
too.
It, you know what I mean? For, as long as it's on our side. What's up?
And it was a really close fight. So, this whole argument of 10-2, 9-3 for Estrada is ridiculous because it was Gonzalez, because it was a great fight and a competitive fight. Could have went either way. I had it 7-5, but I was okay with a draw and 7-5 for Estrada.
Oh yeah.
I have seen some folks, Dan Raphael and a couple others, saying, "Oh, that was a super clean win. That was completely bullshit." I disagree with that. That was a competitive fight.
No, definitely competitive, close. I mean, it was back and forth, and I mean, think about it. Those kind of fights, man, when those little weights, man, like, it's hard to score. I mean, be honest with anybody, you know, even the hardcore fans should, like, you know, be like, "Whoa, man, that was kind of tough to score," you know, and because, I mean, they throw, like, a shitload of punches, man, and they're landing. Some are slipping on the shoulders. Some are landing to the body, and, you know, you just got to catch it. You got to be quick with it. So, I mean, they throw a hell of punches, man, so those fights are hard to score. But, I mean, in all honesty, if I could be honest about the fight, I thought Gonzalez had shown the better power, in my opinion. Like, I think his punches were coming a little bit more crisp and looking a little bit more harder on Estrada. So if I could just say that. But, you know, like me, man, if Mexico got that one, you know, that's all I could say, man. And but also, man, this weekend we had Virgil Ortiz versus Maurice Hooker, man. That shit was dope, man. What a good fight that was, man. And what a time for me to renew my the zone package too, man, because, like, I was a little bit, at the beginning of the year, I was a little hesitant to renew for a year, right, because I didn't know what this year was going to give us. But the zone has been throwing a lot out there for hardcore boxing fans. So all I could do is give their shout out and support them, man, and then just say that their product is really good. You know what I mean? Cause they throw, like, they're throwing it with just boxing, man. So it's good for me. And, but yeah, what a good time for me to renew that shit, man. But you know what I mean? And, but the fight, man, Virgil Ortiz Hooker, man, that what a good fight. It was a pretty good, back and forth. Hooker landed some good shots on Ortiz, man. And, there was a good scary punch. I don't know if you happened to catch it, Chris. It was like a good straight right from, Hooker that kind of had him a little dazed or a little, you know, he saw, you know what I mean? He felt that punch. So, but Ortiz did good, man. You know, he put him away. You know, I loved in the sixth round how we almost put him away, but, you know, that dude's a dog. That dude's tough. But Maurice Hooker, you know, he's claiming right. He's claiming the elbow popped. And whatever, man, the fight was stopped. You know, he couldn't continue because of that reason. So, you know, big shout out to Ortiz. He moves on. You know, all day, man, Mexico, we keep doing it, man. And another weekend for the Mexicans, brother. That's all. You know what I mean? What can I say, bro? I'm so happy, man. I'm so happy that, you know, like, so much is going on right now. Like, it seems like we're everything to back to normal, if I could say it. You know what I mean? And I don't know. If I could say that about boxing, man. And because what now? Like, the Canelo Sounders fight, right? That's just going to have what's going to be in Texas now. The full, like, you know. I guess it's is it full capacity?
Yeah,
case? Is
it's
it,
full.
You know, 100%?
Yep.
Damn, bro.
It's full, baby. They've already sold 20,000 tickets.
20,000? Damn, bro. Dude, that's going to be lit, man. And obviously that's going to be a party. The Brits are going to come out. I hope the Brits come out for their own, man. They, you know what I mean? That I hope this gets since it's going to be in that, it's going to be in the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, I believe, right, with Jones? Jerry Jones?
Yep.
Yeah, hell yeah! Then, dude, the British fans plus the boxing Mexican fans, this one would be lit, man. This one seems like a party, bro. And a little bit kind of wants to go to this one. In all honesty, man, you know what I mean? But I don't know. We'll see, man. And but I don't know, bro. The fight is gonna be electrifying. That's all I can say. Like, if it is open 100%, like you know what I mean? The fight is still away, so hopefully everything's still good. You know what I mean? And 100%. By that time, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, big shout out to that, man. And, cause that seems like a fun night, man, being there that night, man, just to like kind of feel, I don't know, man, just to kind of feel things back to normal. Cause our state is still kind of, I believe it's like, 70% capacity full, over here. So it's not 100%, you know, open, but, you know, just seeing that makes it kind of, you know, makes it better, man. You know what I mean? For everybody. You
and
know,
hearing it.
Say that.
Yeah,
and,
definitely. I agree.
It makes everything better, man.
Normal a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of people out there with different opinions, you know. But I mean, you still got the option to go or not go, or wear a mask, or you know, not wear a mask.
Yeah, you can wear a mask.
You know what I mean?
You can wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only drawback.
Yeah, definitely.
If you're gonna have 60,000 or 50,000 people in one spot, just mandate the mask. That's the only thing that, because we saw that with protests that it didn't spread as much when you have a mask on. So otherwise it like you said, though, it feels good to take these steps back to getting it back to normal.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. And with Canelo and Sounders doing a big fight like that, I think it's great for, you know, just for life and boxing, you know what I mean? I think, because in my opinion, man, because it's awesome to see that that British fans, you know, obviously they support their own in boxing. They're live in boxing. I mean, When Joshua fights, they're there. I mean, they support their own big time, bigger than, you know, Americans support their own. So, you know, and then obviously the Mexicans support their own all the time. So I think it's going to be dope. I mean, I think it's all respect too. You know what I mean? I don't think anything is going to be all crazy and wild. You know what I mean? I think I believe, you know what I mean? I think everything's going to be classy. You know what I mean? If that makes any sense.
Well, you say that until the bell rings. You know, I've been at plenty of these events, and it is classy. It's all great, but once the fight's on, shit pops off. I mean, that's part of the
that's
fun
true.
In the crowd.
Yeah, that's true. And hey, yo, Chris, now that if I could just mention real fast about the crowds, does it ever like get to you when there's like a big fight going on? Let's say like a big fight, mega fight on like a big event or whatever. Big event, whatever. And then like a fight happens in the crowd. Like two drunk dudes are fighting the crowd, and like you see everybody looking towards it, and then there's like a fight going on. Like, does that get to you? Because I'm like, that gets to me. You know what I mean? Like that kind of like what idiots? Like, why are you be staring at like, you know, a bunch of drunk people up there in the, you know, up in the nosebleeds fighting when there's like a real good fight going on in front of you? So I don't know if you've seen that, Chris.
Yeah, it can vary. It can vary. It kind of matters what fight's live, too. You know, if it's the main event, then it does, like, hey, you know. But sometimes when you're there and the shit pops off, it's kind of like driving by an accident. You just look. You know, yeah, I know what you're
That's
saying,
true.
Though. Especially when it's like you're looking dead on at the crowd at home, and you see everybody looking over there and say, hey, dumbass,
yeah, that's
right
what I'm
before
saying.
You, it's going to be a better fight. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, that's it always gets to me. But, I always believe that most of that crowd, I believe always, like, it as like, mega fights, I always believe, like maybe 90% of that crowd is all casuals, you know, just, you know, there to be there for the moment, you know, if that makes any sense, too. But,
right.
I don't know. And but also, Chris, if I could comment real quick, man, and the Shields fight, man, with Marie, I got to see it. I did buy it. I supported the fight, and it was good. It was an all right event. That's all I could really say about it. But Shields did get the win, and what I would have really liked for her to do, like, because she has this big spotlight, right? She's obviously the head of boxing for women's look. You know that I think she should like have an event where like finally the women go 3 rounds or 3 minute rounds. You know. I think that would get a lot of attention from, you know, from boxing fans and from, you know, even from casual fans. Like, oh, finally, it's going to happen. They're like, you know, they're finally going 3 rounds, you know, 3 minute rounds. So I just believe
sure.
that kind of event needs to happen in order for her to kind of get more attention. You know what I mean? But hey, shout out to her too, man, and because she was on the JRE. You know what I mean? She got to talk a little bit and explain some stuff that about her situation. So I don't know. Just shout out to her, you know what I mean? Because I am rooting for her success, because with her success, you know, also boxing or women's boxing follows too. So, you know, that's
yeah.
what I want to say. Because you know what I mean? Because, like, women's boxing gets a lot of negative attention, but I don't know why, because, like, they can make fights happen. It's just that, like, I don't know, for some reason, they don't put them where they need to be, like, and it makes sense to make it kind of interesting, where they could maybe fit them in, like, maybe an undercard of a Canelo fight or, like, an Anthony Joshua fight, you know, put them like that. Like, you know, that would be cool, you know what I mean, and to kind of get more shine for them. But I don't know, that's just my my little opinion about that, because, I don't know, they get a lot of,
sure.
like, Shields, you know, and women's boxing gets a lot of negative attention, because, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, they just don't care. Amanda Serrano is fighting this weekend. It's going to be, you know, I'm rooting for her. You know what I mean? Let's see it happen, man. And because hopefully they can make that Katie Taylor fight happen again, man, because I was excited for that one. Obviously, the pandemic hit, and there was a lot of different opinions on what should happen there. So, but yeah, man, because I'm just saying about that, you know what I mean? Because I think it's, you know, because we're at this moment now, because I think they should start they should push for, like, an event where finally they go 3 minute rounds, and the like Clarissa Shields goes 12 rounds, because it's time, you know what I mean? Like, it's just the space, and man, like, the UFC, you know, they continue with theirs, you know, they do their normal stuff where you know, it's the 5 minute you know, 5
right.
minute rounds. So you know what I mean? So I think it's time, man. You know what I mean? Because Clarissa Shields does have power right now. Like, she does have attention, and she needs to use it, like, in a good way, you know what I mean? Like, if that makes any 3 minute rounds, finally, like, she, like, it just has to
happen.
Well,
and the athletic,
like,
commission, and the commission has to sanction it too, so I mean, that's part of it as well.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, that's my little opinion about that, man, because, you know, because it could have been bigger. I think that fight could have been a lot bigger. It's just that it kind of, you know, it still had that, you know, 2 minute round thing, and you know, 10 minute rounds, and I could see why, like, casual fans or hardcore fans could be kind of still a little upset about that. So I don't know, that's my little 2 cents about that. But as far as that, man, yo, Chris, I don't have too much to say. I believe what we got, Dillian White this weekend, right?
Yeah, Povetkin rematch.
Povetkin, that's the rematch. That's the from what happened from getting knocked out.
Yep. In August.
All right.
Yep, it's the rematch.
Yeah. All right, put me down for Povetkin, man. I just feel like it's going to happen again, maybe. So I don't know. Who knows? We'll see, man. And it should just be a fun fight, but yeah, I don't have too much to say. But, yo, Chris, you know, I just want to thank you for having me on Viva Ropa Dope Radio, and Viva Mexico.
All right, man. You take it easy. Have a good one. Appreciate calling in, as always. And my take on that fight, I said it a couple of times. I do look for a tentative start. I think we'll see a tentative start from both, but especially from White. I'm not going to sit there and say he'll be on his bicycle or anything like that. But like I mentioned, there were several flush shots that landed before Pavekin went down. And like John was saying, that left hook, the overhand rights that are like crafty, even if White's trying to put out a jab, he jabbed pretty well. He's got a decent jab, and he did it pretty well in the first fight, but that overhand right could come right over that. If the fight moves on the inside, I favor Povetkin. I don't know, man. I'm so stuck on this one right now. But I'm going to go Povetkin, too, with a knockout or a TKO. I think it is worth putting something out there on Povetkin because I just read the odds. They're pretty healthy, you know, and I know he was down a couple times and he's closer to falling off the edge, like I mentioned, as far as the fighter career, the fighter spirit in a sense, the punch resistance to be more detailed. So I'm going to go Povetkin this time later, ninth, tenth round, something like that, maybe even a little later, Povetkin winning, but it's going to be a great fight. I'm definitely looking forward to, no doubt about it. There is some fight news we'll get into. We'll have a couple of, I got a couple of tweets for the boxing Twitter segment. Someone's asking me to talk about Tyson. I literally just did that, so I'm not going to redo that one. Terrence Crawford. So Terrence Crawford had a variety of things to say, in an interview. And I think also, if I'm not mistaken, on Sirius XM. And I'm a little hesitant to play the clip per se here, but I think I'll just, this is basically what he said the night of the fight this last weekend with about Spencer Crawford here.
I'm not even worried about Errol Spence no more. I already told everybody that fight is history for me. You know, I'm not thinking or worried about Errol Spence anymore. You know, that fight is behind
me. That fight is behind him. And, you know, I don't know if he's just talking. I don't know if he's just frustrated. I don't know if he's whatever. I don't know exactly what it is. I'm not going to sit here and say 100%. This is what's wrong with it, or just side with him and say they're ducking the fight and all that. You know, it is what it is. But, and we've already had that debate if his, you know, if he's going to the Hall of Fame first ballot or not. Everybody has different opinions, whatever. You can look at his resume. Obviously, it's thin. But here's some other quotes, and then I'll kind of give my take on it. This is from that Sirius XM show. He said, you know, Terrence Crawford was asked if he, if Spence is a 50-50 fight, meaning financially. He says, I don't know because I'm past that. I'm not playing these games where they say we fight you when we want to fight you. We either going to fight you, that's it, or not. That's cool. Basically, like, let's just fight whatever. He also says, I was already undisputed. I don't care anymore. I was already undisputed, basically. So I don't need to be undisputed at this weight class. I just want to keep putting up performances, beat whoever they put in front of me, make money, provide for my family, all the other stuff I don't care anymore. And, you know, he did unify or be undisputed at 140. His best fighter, best win is probably Victor Postol. Some people will say Gamboa at 35. Obviously, the fight with Postol was 140. That fight meant more. That was unification. But it meant more than his undisputed in a sense. As far, well, not meant more, but it was a better opponent, you know, than the guy he fought in Dongo. And I've already done undisputed. It's like, yeah, I hear you. But I guess the thing that bugs me is, one, it's just not financially a 50-50 fight. And if Errol Spence was on Top Rank, Bob Arum would be saying this over and over again. It is not a 50 fight. We'll do the fight, but it's not a 50-50 fight. And if you're going to have ESPN and Fox on it, it's not a 60-40, 70-30 split at that point. You know, so it's, to me, I mean, it is that. But if you're going to split it, it doesn't make sense that way. A lot of people talk about the Wilder Fury. Let's not forget, they had already fought that had nothing to do with split promotion on this side. You know, over here, Top Rank and Al, Bob and Al, right? Then they negotiated terms for a rematch to the point where they drafted up a contract and sent it to Tyson Fury. Then he went to ESPN. So it's, they're way further down. First of all, they fought without Al and Bob even having anything to do with each other. Then they negotiated the rematch without having. Now, I understand why Fury went to ESPN, because of the money, and he ended up getting the fight anyway. So I'm not ripping him, but it's not the same thing. And I remember a while back, I'll keep it short, but when Crawford and Spence were going at each other's necks on Twitter, and then remember they said, okay, we talked, it's cool. Well, on that little Twitter back and forth, Arrow said, you already know what it takes to make this fight. Basically, like, don't play dumb. And Bob also said, we haven't negotiated it, but we've got in the realm, so we kind of shaped something that we know what it would take. Bob's kind of come off some of that where he says, well, we need ESPN Plus to get the most buys, and he's kind of made some excuses and all that. But, you know, the thing actually hasn't been fully negotiated yet, so that's the frustrating thing on both sides, but especially the Crawford side, and here's why, is because, dude, you haven't even gone through the negotiation. But, you know, he says he's the A side. Well, that's just not true. It's a, I mean, 50-50. He gets mad at 50-50. Now, I understand both of them are probably getting irritated, but that's part of it. You know, they keep getting asked about it. And I don't think Spence would actually say, oh, it has to be 80-20. I think they're both getting frustrated, and they're both just saying it, and they're just giving each other shit now. You know, when he says, don't make me 70-30 you, I think Spence is just giving him shit, fucking with him. You know, and maybe they have something planned here more than we know. And but I'll say this, if Crawford doesn't care about it at all, you know, what he should do, if he really wants to fight, he should just say, I want to do 64, or, you know, 60-40, I'll take the 40. Now what? Ball's in your court, Spence. I think the fight could get made. Now, I understand people take, like, they just get too personal, like fanboy stuff. You're just like, dude, you can say he's a better fighter. That's fine. I mean, there's been plenty of better fighters that weren't as marketable. It happens all the time. So, like, throughout boxing. So it's not a 50-50 fight. It just isn't. They've both been on pay-per-view. They both have gates we know about. It's just not. So to think he's going to be the A side on Spence, it's just ridiculous. And if the fight's not going to happen, but if he doesn't go independent, that's really like, really, dude? Really? Because, you know, I always thought there was either Crawford will finally just go independent or maybe sign a one-off or two-off with Al just to make these fights and then still stay independent. I mean, Mikey Garcia did the same thing coming from Top Rank, so... I've always favored Crawford to win the fight, so it's not about that. I'm not fanboying for Spence. This is just business. And I mean, not long ago, well, long ago now, but Aaron was saying shit about Floyd, saying, oh, Pacquiao's the A-side and all that type of stuff, when that was more of a 50-50 fight way back then before it actually got fully negotiated. And, well, they actually did go through a negotiation. And both of them are going to make, what, 20 or 25 mil up front. I'm talking 2009, 2010. But it's just funny to me that the thing hasn't even gone fully through negotiations. So it's like, how can you be sick of negotiation when it's just talk right now? There hasn't been a full negotiation, so how can you be sick of it? Moving on. Let's see, Vasily Lomachenko and Devin Haney. You know, Devin Haney and Bill Haney love to say that all these fighters are capping, you know, to use a, you know, all cap, right, to use a young person's term, slang, right, the youngsters out there, the youth. no cap, that's cap. And sometimes they're right. I mean, Teofimo didn't send. He was capping. He didn't send a contract over. But in the same breath, Devin and Bill do plenty of cap because they were going to fight Fortuna. Oh, actually, they're signing Linares, but I'll fight Lomachenko. Well, if you're going to keep your belt that you say is the real belt, now you fight Linares, and then you have to fight Fortuna to keep your belt. Now, maybe he'll end up dropping it, whatever, but they're talking about, oh, this, that, and the other, like, you know, we'll fight him, no problem, we'll fight him. But it's kind of all over the place at this point. We're ready to fight him. We're ready to send it and all that. Here's Lomachenko, and it was actually it was from an interview with Snow Queen. She's done a couple of good interviews with her. And this is actually more. He said, "We did not receive any offers from Devin Haney. In my opinion, he only remembered me after he signed the contract with Linares. He was trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. Devin, stop lying. Tell Eddie to send the contract. Devin Haney has the real WBC belt, the one I got for beating Campbell. They gave me a franchise belt, and the real belt went to Haney automatically. He got his belt without fighting," which is kind of funny because you just got done saying it's the real belt, but whatever. And like I said, I do think there is some cap going on for some folks like Teofimo. In that scenario, not that he wouldn't fight Haney, but in that scenario, he wasn't sending it out. And it sounds like May 21st, Haney and Jorge Linares will fight. And like I said, though, the mandate is Javier Fortuna after that. So he can't even fight after that. And in the same breath, you could say Lomachenko, who, you know, we talked about this probably a few weeks ago. There's some news that just came out with Cameron Wolf, ESPN staff writer. You know, plans are on their way for Lomachenko and Nakatani this summer. A firm date hasn't been finalized, but the bout is expected to headline a summer ESPN card. So maybe they're just moving on. Maybe they're just kind of lining it up to talk about it and say, hey, we want that fight. Maybe they're capping too. But I do kind of find it funny that, you know, especially like on the Boxing Voice in some of those interviews with the representation for, you know, for both sides, whether it's Javier or for Devin, you could see Haney, you know, Bill Haney was like the kid said, capping. Now, here's something funny, though, or not funny, but kind of strange. Vasily Lomachenko insisted he's serious about wanting the fight with Devin. Either Bob, and here's what's telling here, or potentially telling, either Bob can negotiate with Eddie and make it happen before April 2022 while I'm still with Top Rank, or I have to wait a year, get out of the contract, and then fight Haney. So he's up April 2022. He's talking about maybe he'd have to get out of his contract. Oh, I didn't see that coming. Okay, so we'll just kind of close it on Boxing Twitter. Fighters going live on IG or a silly interview is a way to keep their names out in the public. Yes, it can be irritating or ridiculous at times, but weren't we just asking them to do more media between fights? Unfortunately, this is what it looks like, and I'd have to agree with that tweet because that's actually my tweet. Someone just sent it to me a little bit ago. That is my tweet. Bud is not ducking Porter. He just does not want to be held responsible for ending Porter's career. That's a cop-out. What else we got here? Oscar De La Hoya has declared that they are planning a world tour for Ryan Garcia next. The idea would be for him to fight potentially three fights in different territories to help develop his profile as a global star. Who is going to fight? Who is he going to fight, though? Just spoke to Virgil Ortiz. This is Ryan O'Hara. He revealed that he tested positive for COVID in February and suffered from horrible symptoms and nearly pulled out, added that there's no point in a rematch, to be honest. I was 70% tonight, and look what I did. That's kind of funky. Like, did you tell somebody that you were like that? I don't know. It's kind of funky. Ortiz clarified he isn't ducking Ennis, but instead wants these older guys get out of the welterweight. I want to fight, get rid of these older fighters, and then we can fight, which is kind of like, well, that would be an end prime. Anyway, we're going to get out of here. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll be back next week in the break it down. Take it easy. Peace.